Subscribe to the Writer's Block Podcast with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. They're rewriting afternoon sports radio one word at a time. This is Writer's Block with Jeff Blair and Stephen Brunt on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Live radio. It is Writer's Block with Blair and Brunt. Literally 4 minutes before we came in the air, this from John Heyman and other sources. Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred has absolutely dropped the hammer on the Houston Astros for illegally stealing signs during their World Series championship in 2017. General Manager Jeff Luhnow has been given a one-year suspension. Manager A.J. Hinch has been given a one-year suspension. The team has been ordered to forfeit or will forfeit first and second round draft picks in both 2020 and 2021. The team will be fined $5 million, which is the maximum allowed under MLB's constitution. And former Astros assistant general manager Brandon Taubman, who, when we were last talking about him, was essentially being fired for sexist comments made in the Astros clubhouse.
Yeah, the Roberto Osuna discussion.
He has been placed on baseball's ineligible list, which effectively ends his career. This, as we said, is just breaking. There could be further suspensions coming for other members of the Astros. Alex Cora, the manager of the Boston Red Sox.
I'd just like to take bets here. Cora will not be managing the Boston Red Sox this year.
I think that's a pretty good.
Because he's implicated in both.
Yes, he's implicated in both the Astros sign stealing and, of course, the Boston Red Sox are also being investigated. And, Stephen, I'll start with you. I mean, I didn't know this. I wrote a little item today on our website saying that, you know, I think of all the commissioners in sports, Rob Manfred's got the diciest decade ahead of him because he's dealing with a lot of issues that have to do with the actual playing of the game and all that.
Yep.
He has essentially suspended the general manager and manager of the team that won the World Series 3 years ago, the team that won the World Series 2 years ago, their manager and their organization is under investigation. Try to put this in context for us.
I haven't got one.
You know, there isn't like
this. No, I don't think there is one in terms of an organization. Like, we've had people thrown out of sports for life.
Yep.
Right? Been put on the ineligible list in baseball, as Brandon Taubman was. You know, that's what Pete Rose is on. Mm-hmm. He is on the ineligible list.
And, the official with the St. Louis Cardinals who was implicated in the data breach.
Yeah. Yeah. So that happened. And it's interesting. And again, I'm not sure if Taubman is on there is implicated in this. I would assume not for the other stuff.
I would assume, guess. Yes.
No, I don't think in terms of an organization in any sport being penalized to this, you know, like the Patriots lost what? Tom Brady was suspended for four games because of Deflategate. Sean Payton was suspended for a year because of the bounty situation with the Saints. But to see an organization.
Correct. But was he head coach then, by the way?
He was head coach. Okay. Yeah. So that's kind of, those are the kind of parallels. But when you look at the amount of the fine, the draft picks, you know, draft picks in baseball are not like draft picks in other sports necessarily, but still, you lose a first and a second for 2 years. That's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think if there has been a rebuke to an organization on this scale in any sport ever. And I would say off the top of my head, no. And, so it's a big one.
Yeah. And this is,
you know, aside from the Black Sox, right? Like,
right.
Like, well, we could go to that.
And,
right?
And bearing in mind that Jim Crane is a powerful, powerful owner.
Yeah.
The Houston Astros.
Well, these
owner
guys were within a hair of winning the World Series this year. Though, yeah. You know, I was funny. I was in Houston. I was there last week, right? Because we were shooting with Kevin Biggio. You know, the model organization in baseball in a lot of ways. The kind of epitome of how you're supposed to run a team in the 21st century, how you build it back from the ashes, how you build a fan base, beautiful stadium, all of those things. They're kind of the gold standard in a lot of ways. Not a lot of people don't like them. Some people there, like Jeff Luhnow, is not the most popular figure in baseball because they're kind of arrogant. But, you know, in terms of their success, everybody wants to. The smartest guys in terms of analytics, they're, you know, like, they're cutting edge, right? Well, they're also kind of cutting edge in terms of cheating, it would appear.
Yeah.
The aside from the whack in the garbage can with the baseball bat, which seems a bit primitive.
It almost seems now as if I don't want to believe the whack. And I mean, there's got to be more than whacking the can with a garbage bat, really.
Yeah. Well, because you've got
a garbage can with a bat. There's got to be.
This great genius scheme. It's like the Rube Goldberg machine, which ends with a guy hitting a garbage can with a bat.
Exactly.
But, this is... Like, again, I'm trying to think, you know, like, yeah, the Patriots are the most successful organization in the NFL over the last 20 years, and they have been penalized, but not like this.
No. I'm just reading MLB Network just has the, this is now official. Jeff Luhnow has been suspended. There's documentary evidence, or documentation, I should say, that says that he had that he was aware of this and that he didn't take action.
Same with Hinch.
Same with AJ.
So they're
Hinch.
Both suspended without pay for a year.
And it does appear as if the banging on the garbage can thing did have some. I mean, it's specifically referred to there. Let me ask you two questions, Stephen. One, for me, this is a bigger scandal than steroids.
Yeah, me too. Yes. Like, look, the baseball steroid one is always informed by the fact that there was this, you know, unofficial don't ask, don't tell policy,
yes.
That, you know, how legal or illegal they were within the sport was a gray area for a long time. In theory, they were illegal, but they didn't test. So therefore, who knew?
But even then, I viewed it as a value added thing.
Well, yeah, I do. I always had a hard time taking a moral stance on it because I thought it's a gradient, right? Like the difference between a illegal performance-enhancing substance and a legal performance-enhancing substance was just semantics.
Yes.
You know, so, you know, but again, we live in a country that turned itself inside out over that stuff. So there are people who disagree with us on that. But I always thought it was so gray that I had a hard time, you know, in almost every case, kind of standing in moral outrage about players using performance-enhancing drugs. You know, this is something that, you know, clearly those rules, it's sort of like, you know, people get upset that Pete Rose isn't in the Hall of Fame or isn't eligible to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. But I always go back to the fact that Pete Rose violated a rule that is written on the wall of every clubhouse in baseball.
Right.
So, you know, you might not like the rule, but, you know, I guess you could not like the rule. But it's there, and it's black and white, and he violated it. And there's no question about that.
And it's the first rule.
And it is the first rule because it's about the integrity of the game.
Exactly.
And, again, plays back to the whole Black Sox thing. This is something where, you know, they said you cannot use technology. You can steal signs in the old-fashioned way, but don't use technology to do that. And if you do, we're going to penalize you. Maybe, you know, no one knew it was going to be quite like this, but it was explicit, right?
Yeah.
And they got caught. And they got caught red-handed. And, you know, to me, it's clear-cut. Like, I don't have a counter-argument for this. It's not good old baseball. You know, they steal signs and they get put a little pine tar in there. This is people flaunting it.
I'm envisioning Mike Fiers as Aaron Brockovich.
Yeah,
you know, Mike Fiers is the whistleblower.
Well, there are a bunch of people.
Started this.
It sounds like there are lots of people who ex Astros people who are willing to rat him out.
Moving beyond that, does this take away from both the Astros? Well, let's deal with the Astros World Series right now, because again, we'll await a decision on the Boston Red Sox. Does this take away from the legitimacy of their World Series?
That's a tough one.
See, people are going to make that case. I don't think it necessarily does because you still had to win the games.
Yeah.
But it certainly makes it easy for someone to say that it's illegitimate.
Yeah, it doesn't. I don't think you void those World Series, the World Series victory.
Right.
I think that, you know, that's a, that, well, let's put it this way. If you could, You know, if you wanted to play hang and judge,
put an asterisk beside it if you wanted.
You could put an asterisk beside it if you wanted to. You could, you could, and maybe, you know, again, I'm not sure where those asterisks actually go these days, but I guess you could do that.
Sorry, I just don't want to interrupt. This is an excerpt from the Astros investigation. Alex Cora was involved in developing both the banging scheme and utilizing the replay review room to decode and transmit signs. Cora participated in both schemes and through his active participation implicitly condoned the player's conduct. This is from Rob Manfred. I will withhold determining the appropriate level of discipline for Cora until after the DOI completes its investigation of the allegations that the Red Sox engaged in impermissible electronic sign stealing in 2018 while Cora was the manager. That's an excerpt from the Astros investigation.
He's not going to be managing the Red Sox this year.
No.
There's no chance. And it's too bad. I really like Alex Cora. So I kind of feel bad for him. He's a good guy. But, yeah, he's not going to be working in baseball this year. I think that's pretty certain. It's hard to see a guy who was implicated in this and who also may be implicated for another team. It'll be interesting to see what the punishment is there.
I'm with you. I like Alex Cora, but the Boston Red Sox having the book thrown at him kind of feels good in some ways.
Oh, I got no problem. And again, I say a lot of people probably don't have a whole lot of problem with Jeff Luhnow having the book thrown at him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with Brandon Taubman being thrown out of baseball, I think, you know, people are probably okay with that at this moment, whether it's for this or for the other stuff. It's hard to, you're not going to shed any tears for them. But again, this was done eyes wide open.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe not understanding fully what the consequences would be because we haven't seen this before. And again, you know, Rob Manfred has made a statement as commissioner of baseball here. This is as every big a statement as, you know, Kennesaw Mountain Landis, right? It's a big one.
I was, you know, sort of rattling and I can't remember off the top of my head, but the first one was Kennesaw Mountain Landis and the Black Sox. That came to mind. Bud Selig. I'm trying to think. I'm sure something happened at some point, I don't remember anything like this. I don't remember an executive being suspended. Now that I say that, I think the Chicago White Sox ran into trouble at one point. Well, the Atlanta Braves as well, but that wasn't Bud Selig.
No.
The Atlanta Braves, their general manager was effectively was tossed Manfred. Out of the game.
That was Manfred again, right?
But, right.
You know, and again, people will say, well, what about the drug stuff with Selig? But the problem is, you know, I will forever believe that Bud Selig was complicit in that. So, you know, on some level that everybody in baseball was complicit. So, you know, whatever he did to people or attempted to do to people in terms of performance-enhancing drugs, I think is tainted. I think it's Kennesaw Mountain Landis and the Black Sox and this.
I've just been handed the statement from Rob Manfred. It is 9 pages long. And just to clarify something, Brandon Taubman has been placed on the ineligible list, quote, based on his inappropriate conduct in the clubhouse on October 19th, 2019. So it's nothing to do with this. It's specifically his comments directed at female writers.
You know what? That's separate from this. And I know we're going to get the cheating scandal.
That's a huge statement.
That is a huge statement, actually, because, you know, what he did, you know, again, to a member of the media, but using kind of, you know, strangely, perversely using Roberto Osuna and, you know, and his, you know, sexual assault case as a way to kind of drive a wedge with a person in the media. It was a perverse, dumb, gross thing to do. But he just got Pete Rose for that.
Yes.
That's pretty strong too, Jeff.
That is a very strong statement. I was going to say buried in the middle of this, but that's simply the way it is. I'm just reading. I find it unnecessary. Okay, and the former assistant general manager, Brandon Taubman, Rob Manfred addresses here, my investigators interviewed Taubman regarding the sign stealing allegations, and like Luhnow, Taubman denied knowledge of both yada yada. I find it unnecessary to determine Taubman's culpability for the Astros rules violations because, as described below, I'm imposing significant discipline on him for his inappropriate conduct in the clubhouse. So basically, Brandon Taubman, Rob Manfred is saying, I could probably lower the hammer on him for this, but I got this other thing that I'm going to lower the hammer on.
It's forever. You don't need two death sentences. Like, one will do.
Yeah, and again, I'm just pouring through this. There does not appear to be any
No, this is a historic moment in the long, long history of baseball. I'm kind of wondering what Manfred would do. I thought, I think we all kind of figured this, it's going to be a big one because they caught him red-handed.
Right? I thought Jeff Luhnow would be suspended, and I thought the organization would be fined heavily. I had no idea that that you would go so far as to suspend the manager of the team.
Mm-hmm.
That's more than a slap on the wrist. The other stuff, I think, $5 million. Jim Crane will find $5 million lying around in the
sofa. Yeah, it's not
tonight.
Nothing though, Jeff. Like that's,
but it's not
it's
nothing.
Even
that's
for
right.
Those guys, they're going to speak at 2 o'clock, which I assume is Houston
Central
time, which is
yeah.
4. So is it 3 o'clock? Yeah, 3 o'clock here.
3 o'clock Eastern time.
So we will hear from the Astros, although they're not letting anybody show it live, which is interesting.
Yeah.
We'll hear their response. I don't think there's any appeal here, is there? There's no way to appeal this that I can think of. It's not because it's not covered under the collective agreement.
Yeah, it wouldn't be covered under the CBA.
The commissioner has, as we know, has wide-ranging powers when it comes to the best interests of baseball.
Right. So I don't pretend to know, but there has been nothing to indicate so far that the Astros have. I just don't know where you'd appeal it to. I've got to think that. Jim and the statement does specifically take Jim Crane off the hook, and that it says he did not know of the sign stealing scheme, which I actually kind of tend to believe. First of all, I don't think he'd need to know it.
No,
I mean, but there'd be no reason to tell him.
Nope.
But I would also think that Jim Crane and Rob Manfred have had several discussions about this before the announcement. But
let's think Boston now. So let's go, because that's coming. So, mm-hmm. Alex Cora is the common element in these two mm-hmm. things, obviously. So, again, I think Alex Cora is in some, he's in deep. But, David Dombrowski's not there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not that, because that would be kind of the next question. Chaim Bloom's there, but he came in after the
yep.
fact. Where does the hammer fall in Boston? Because it seems to me if one team did this and the other team did the same thing, the punishment has to be the same, does it not? Different people are going to get suspended. And, again, they don't have a general manager to suspend there necessarily. But if you're going to fine the Astros $5 million, don't you have to fine the Red Sox $5 million if they did it? I think you do. And I think you have to take away the draft picks. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's the same crime, right?
You would think so. It's the same thing, because essentially Alex Cora, there's culpability here for what happened in Houston as well as Boston. I mean, if you really want to get down to it, if you're Rob Manfred, you may come down harder in Alex Cora than A.J. Hinch.
Yeah, I would say that a year is, I would be an absolute minimum. If Alex Cora is found guilty, essentially, in both cases, and it sounds like they've done their due diligence here in terms of the investigation, but that's certainly the implication here is that they got him both places. I would think that would compound the crime, would it not?
I would think so. And the remarkable thing is that, again, just going through the statement, there's a ton of evidence here. Like, they had no problem getting people to talk. That's the detail involved in this report is remarkable. Down to
There's a lot of guys who don't owe them anything. You leave an organization, you're not being paid by them anymore. Your career's moved on or whatever. If you're a player, your career's ended.
Mm-hmm.
You don't owe those guys anything. Or you might not feel it. And maybe on some level you kind of hope that some guys said this is wrong.
Rob Manfred, and again, I'm just reading from this release that we just received, says he will not assess discipline against individual Astros players, even though it's apparent they knew about this and utilized it. I made the decision in September 2017 that I would hold a club's general manager and field manager accountable for misconduct of this kind, and I will not depart from that decision. Of course, in not departing from that decision, he alleviates the idea that he avoids having to deal with the Major League Baseball Players
Correct.
Association.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Jeff, because that would be a huge can of worms.
Yeah.
And we would have, there are rules laid out for what you can or cannot do to players in terms of discipline. There is a appeal process, and it would be, it would be harder. One thing if guys knew about it, and again, to some degree guys benefited from mm-hmm. it, but to kind of assign responsibility for it to players would be way, way trickier. You know, again, I'm not saying he's, you know, that they are without responsibility. They have some. But I can see why Rob Manfred would not want to wade into those waters.
So in case you just joined us, the Commissioner Rob Manfred has dropped the hammer in the Houston Astros. They will forfeit 2020 and 2021 first and second round draft picks. The organization's been fined $5 million. The big news, the big hammer blow for the Astros, general manager Jeff Luhnow and manager A.J. Hinch have been suspended for the rest of the season. This was a result of the sign-stealing they're not allegations anymore, as a result of the sign-stealing conducted by the Houston Astros the past couple of seasons. The other takeaway from this is Alex Cora, the manager of the Red Sox, was named in this report. He's not been specifically dealt with, but you could probably anticipate that he will face some disciplinary action as well from Rob Manfred. We will stay on top of this story all afternoon long. The roundtable, the Monday roundtable, Arash Madani and Scott MacArthur, two fellas that certainly know their way around the ballpark. They will join us. We'll talk about this, and we'll check Madani for bruises after the Vikings elimination by the San Francisco 49ers.
He knew it was coming. See, that's the thing. It's like, he knew it was coming.
We all did.
He's lived his life.
And boy, the Leafs are a team in crisis.
Yes.
Crisis. Freddie Anderson can't even save their ass anymore. 8-4 losers to the Florida Panthers last night. Jeff Merrick joins us to discuss the Leafs. They've called up Rasmus Sandin, by the way, this afternoon. Take a look at Zach Cassian and Matthew Tkachuk's excellent Saturday evening at the arena. And we'll talk a little about Ray Shiro and his departure from the New Jersey Devils as well. It is busy. It is Monday. It is Writer's Block with Blair and Brunt on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
It's Writer's Block with Blair and Deitch again. Just a little update.
No, it's not Deitch. Deitch is not here today.
Deitch. Brunt and Blair. Did I say Deitch and Brunt or Brunt and Blair?
You said Blair and Deitch, I think.
Okay, whatever. Anyhow, Brunt and Blair. My mind wandered. Congrats, by the way. We've got to talk about your new YouTube show, your new show.
It's just the new Sportsnet show on...
Explain it to me before we bring American.
It's called Open Invitation. They are one-on-one, kind of intimate, over a beer or over a meal interviews with people that are interesting to me.
Anybody get really drunk during it?
It's most of them won't. I'm the only one that's actually willing to drink beer. Most of them are. They don't want to be seen drinking beer, but I'm always willing to have one. So
come on, even Mansbridge?
Yeah, Mansbridge. He may have had one at with me. I believe he did drink one. It's a cool project. So they will show up. They'll be linked through the sportsnet.ca, so you'll be able to find them there, presumably through the app as well. They will live on YouTube, on our Sportsnet YouTube channel. They'll be out there. I think we've got 7 or 8 of them in the can. We've got a few more we're shooting, so pop up.
They'll be up tomorrow.
First one will be up tomorrow. Dana White will be up tomorrow because it's a big week in UFC. Conor McGregor comes back Saturday night, so it's apropos. We shot with him out in Vegas in his palatial offices. And then there's a variety of people who will pop up over the next 8, 10, 12 weeks. So, it's been fun. That's what I spent most of the fall doing. And it's cool. It's a chance to, you know, when you put people on TV for an interview, a lot of with cameras and lights and all that stuff, people, it's hard to kind of give it a natural feel. It's even hard on radio sometimes. But what we tried to do with this thing is create a space where, you know, people could converse the way they normally do, not as though they are doing an interview. Mm-hmm. And, kind of give me...
Liquor always helps in that regard.
Well, that does. You know, it works. It has worked for me. But it gives us kind of free range of where to go.
Is there cigar smoking?
There is no... Well, you can't smoke cigars anywhere in Toronto. We could have in Las Vegas, you know.
I never thought of that.
So we shot in Las Vegas with our buddy Ariel Helwani. Brent Musburger's on there. It's been a lot of fun to do. And they have a different feel to them. You know, it's got this kind of loose vibe to it. So anyway, yes, you'll be able to find it somewhere as of 6 p.m. tomorrow.
Wow.
What do you got in your hand there?
I got more breaking news. It can stop already any minute. The Toronto Maple Leafs announced today that defenseman Morgan Riley underwent a CT scan this afternoon after sustaining an injury in last night's game against Florida. He will be out a minimum of 8 weeks with a fractured foot. Hence, of course, the call-up of Rasmus Sandin's second foot injury to a defenseman. Jake Muzzin already in a walking cast. At least he was the last time I saw him. I actually saddled up beside him in the washroom in the press box, which is probably more information that you need to know. But anyhow, he was in a walking cast then. So there you go. Morgan Riley out for a minimum of 8 weeks with a fractured foot, a team that already has a ton of defensive issues, now even more so.
Yeah. Maybe the 8 weeks will give his other mystery injury a time to heal as well.
That could be. He has been playing with a mystery injury. My gosh, though. Morgan Riley, Jake Muzzin, both out. That's a lot of minutes. That is absolutely a lot of minutes. Do we have Jeff Merrick? We're trying to track Jeff Merrick down, Travis. Slight technical difficulty. Okay.
I would think this puts a slightly different light on trade deadline for the Toronto Maple Leafs. You know, because A, they're going to need some bodies.
Yeah.
And B, they're going to have a little bit of cap room to play with.
Well, now
these guys are on IR, right?
Yeah, he's on IR. And again, it says he's be on IR and will be reassessed. Ooh, that's even worse. He'll be reassessed after 8 weeks. So we could be,
just in a match,
2 months
that'd
down the
road.
That
pretty much get you to just on the eve of the playoffs.
Yeah. So it would allow you, I guess, to make a move at the deadline. This has got to be a pretty significant chunk of money coming off or going on injured reserve as well. So there you go. Morgan Riley undergoing a CT scan this afternoon, sustaining an injury in last night's game against Florida. He will be out a minimum of 8 weeks with a fractured foot. He joins Jake Muzzin on the sidelines. No idea when Jake Muzzin is due back. The Leafs, by the way, their next game is Tuesday on Sportsnet Ontario. They'll take on the New Jersey Devils. Leafs 8-4 losers last night to the Florida Panthers. The worst game of the Sheldon Keefe era, if you want to call it era, Stephen. And, this is what Mitch Marner, Derek, do we have a clip from Mitch Marner? This is what Mitch Marner had to say after the game last night. Let's hear this.
Forget about this game. Leave it. Like I said, we know the team we can be when we are staying above people, when we're making it hard to get in our zone. We've got away from that. I don't know why it's been working for us, but we need to wake up here. I mean, we got a day off tomorrow, so everyone, I think, just go home and relax, lose this game, forget about it. Make sure we come ready against New Jersey. They've been on a bit of a hot run recently, and they got guys that can score, and they got a lot of guys that can make plays. So we got to make sure we make it hard for them to get in our zone. We got to make sure we make it hard for them to get around our net and make plays. And like I said, we got to make sure that we don't leave these guys out to dry again. These two tendies this year have been our backbone for a lot of games.
I guess tendy is a goaltender. Why can't they just use English?
Tendies.
Two tendies.
Has that always been...
I know. It's like the continuing infantilization of hockey.
I like that.
Twiggies. Go back if you want fun. Go back and listen to that Uber tape of the Ottawa Senators guys where they're crapping on their coach, where they're talking about their twiggies, their sticks. I got my twiggy on the boards. Seriously. If a two-year-old talked the way half of these clowns talk, you'd slap him upside the head and kick him in the ass and say, speak English. Anyhow, the tendies. Tendies have been left out to dry.
You want to leave your tendy out to dry.
Come on, Mitch. You're better than that.
Anyway, that was the previously happy-go-lucky Mitch.
That was the previously happy-go-lucky
Mitch. Anymore.
Yeah, and I can't. See, now there's so much I'm upset about. Morgan Riley getting hurt and then tendies. Why'd you do that? Why'd you do the tendies? Not quite up there with Ron Wilson when he called Jonas Gustafsson, whose nickname was the Monster, Monsty. That's still maybe the worst. When you're shortening guys' nicknames and you're giving their nicknames nicknames, that's never good.
I don't think Ron Wilson ever said tendy, though.
Yeah, I don't think he'd say tendies. Travis does not look happy there. He's pointing the finger now. He's got the index finger out.
Yeah, he's demanding.
We have some technical difficulties here. Mr. Brunt, look.
You know what I think? I think there's a bunch of GMs who are going to be sellers at the deadline who have excess defensemen or who are eagerly anticipating Kyle Dubas's phone call, right?
Yeah, I think so. I absolutely think so. Look, this is, I mean, Sheldon, it's not that Sheldon Keefe had a really smooth ride when he took over. Things worked when he took over. It was pretty clear that Mike Babcock, whether he lost some players, lost the dressing room, whatever, it was pretty clear that the Leafs played better. They looked better. and they had better results in the early days under Sheldon Keefe. Now, we've seen in recent games the loss to the Oilers and last night's game. This is, you know, we've seen Freddie Anderson removed from a couple of games. Freddie Anderson, kind of the, you know, the magic bullet that writes every, that's kind of righted everything with the Toronto Maple Leafs this year. He's been removed from a couple of games. But here's the thing. I think you need to be a little guarded when it comes to overreacting to a loss to the Florida Panthers. Because my guess is the Leafs thoroughly enjoyed their time in Florida.
Well, Florida's won. They won a crazy number of games at home. You know, right. In that, you know, extraordinarily atmospheric arena. You know, it intimidates a lot of people with its silence. You know, but they do seem to win a lot there, which maybe
it's like day games. And there's a reason the Raptors do so well in day games in Toronto.
Yeah, and there used to be, there are various cities where, for different reasons, sometimes Vegas teams underperform the next
Montreal?
Day. Montreal, of course, yeah. So they, you know, that's the first thing I thought was, yeah, they had a day off in Florida before this. They perhaps relaxed a bit.
Although we did not see any pictures of them on the boat fishing. Remember a couple of years ago where we saw them
that way? I forget exactly why that was scandalous. I'm sure someone will remind me.
I think there was somebody had a beer in there. There was beer involved.
Because they were losing and they should have been practicing or something.
Absolutely.
Anyway. But yeah.
The notion that guys in their early 20s would have a beer in a boat.
Yeah, yeah. That's just scandalous. Scandalizes me. But you know, look, the overriding issue, though, Jeff, which, and again, I'm not going to fret about it in January, but I'm sure people will, which is, you know, like, there have been teams that have won Stanley Cups because their goaltending has been extraordinary, right? It happens, right? Mm-hmm. You know, every once in a while, not always. You have to always have really good goaltending to win a Stanley Cup. You know, Binnington was really good for St. Louis, but that was one component to why they won. But you've had guys, you know, Patrick Waugh stole that last Stanley Cup that the Habs won.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that, but I'm not sure you can win a Stanley Cup where the guy has to be absolutely extraordinary, face the number of shots he faces, where you play kind of conscience free offensive hockey, which these guys doing, it's super fun to watch. I got to say, like, I'm
in favor of this style.
I'm happy to watch it. It's a blast. All the creativity, the defenseman taking chances, all that stuff's a blast. But if my friend Mr. Burke was here, you know, he would remind everyone of what he says all the time, which is you can, this is great, but you can't win a Stanley Cup doing this.
No.
You can't get through four rounds. I'm not sure they can get, you got to get into that first round before you can win that first round. And, you know, I really hope they can, because I think it would be good for the world if you could win a Stanley Cup playing the way they're playing. But I'm not sure Freddie Anderson.
It'd be good for our world.
Well, it'd be good for our world. Yes, that's the other thing. Yeah, by extension, it would be good for our world. But I just don't know. You know, Freddie Anderson's tremendous.
Yeah.
But, you know, if on a day when he's slightly less than perfect, you're going to get killed, or he's fighting the puck and you're going to get killed, or he's not feeling well, you're going to get killed. I'm not sure that is sustainable.
Did you borrow that phrase, conscience-free offensive hockey?
I don't know.
It's very good.
You like it?
I'm writing it down. I'm writing it down in my book, Conscience-Free Offensive Hockey. We'll take a break and be back with more Writer's Block with Blair and Brunt on a very busy Monday on Sportsnet 590, the Fan of Sportsnet 360.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360. It really is Writer's Block. Stephen Brunt and Jeff Blair. We will, though, have a roundtable with MacArthur and Medani.
Might start any minute now.
It could start. If you guys are listening,
come on,
you
want to
get
guys
down here? Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Time's a-wasting. We'll get you on air.
We'd call you, but
God knows, after doing the leadoff, MacArthur needs another 2 hours radio. So, if you guys are out there, get your ass down here. ASAP. And I'm sure we'll talk to the boys about, well, you know, they watched the 49ers-Vikings game.
They did together.
Because Arash is a bit of a Vikings fan, and MacArthur is a 49er.
Yeah, so I thought that was really kind of a nice thing that the two of them would, you know, deign to sit there. Like when, you know, my parents were insane Hamilton Tiger Cats fan when I was a kid, they wouldn't even sit in a room with each other, right? Like, just had to be in separate rooms listening. We used to listen on the radio because, you know, the games were all blacked out because they were so cranked. Yeah, like an Argo fan in the same room, and they wouldn't have done that.
Wow. Yeah, no chance. I can't see that happening. So, although if you're a Vikings fan, you've sort of you've learned to become the NFL's doormat. You're kind of the welcome wagon for the NFL. We are the team that helps your team go to the
championship. They're a playoff team. They went around.
San Francisco's awfully good.
Yes, they are.
San Francisco is awfully good.
Well, we'll talk about it a lot, but it was a great weird weekend of football. Boy, there's a lot of stuff going on. The crazy comeback, the KC game, down 24-0, coming back, Lamar Jackson melting down, and Baltimore melting down against the Titans, and Derrick Henry running, don't fall behind those guys.
Well, I was going to say, and we spent a lot of time talking this year on this show and other shows about how that running back is kind of going back to free agency, right? Running back's kind of disappearing as a factor. It is, unless you have Derrick Henry.
Yeah, he's a monster. That means you can win with Ryan Tannehill as your quarterback, throwing like Bob Greasy, throwing like mm-hmm. 10 passes a game. And then, the late game last night, was really close. That game could have turned again in the last 3 minutes. Big sack by the Packers really late in the game that kind of won it for him. Drama.
Let me ask you something, because you've frankly been around football more than I have, but there's a lot of talk about Bill O'Brien's decision making in that loss to Kansas City. The decision to go for the field goal, instead of the touchdown, and then the decision to call the fake punt. And this is what would bother me. I don't mind if a coach is going to be consistent. It makes no sense to go to the field goal and then do the fake punt.
Well,
if you're gonna go for the jugular, go for the jugular when you're down in the other team's.
But I think that fake punt, and again, I didn't hear O'Brien talk about it after, but the fake punt is a situational thing where they would call that on the line because of they would see something, right? And a guy made an extraordinary play.
It was a terrific
otherwise
play.
That guy's still running, right? Yes. Like he had the whole side of the field, and it was a you call that, you don't call that on the sideline, then go out and do it no matter what. You call that, you have that as an option, and then somebody signals for it because he said, look, there's only one guy out here. I can outrun him. I only got to go 3 yards, and I could probably go 30. So, that's a decision made in the, hats off to the guy that made the tackle, because that's a great open field tackle. It's hard to do. And in terms of not going for the jugular, the temptation would certainly have been to say, let's just run it down their throat where we got them on the, let's go, it'd be 28-0. And, even that, if you don't do that, you grind out a few more minutes off the clock. But, 24-0 is four scores.
Yeah.
Right? And you're thinking, we're four scores. We're ahead of them by four. We'd be ahead of them by four scores instead of three in the first quarter. They are a really explosive team. Part of you thinks, I don't want to give them the opportunity to get a lift by stopping us on fourth down. I think that's the way you think it through, and you say, so we're not going to give them that chance, even though we're killing them right now. We'll go up by four scores. We're going to be 24-0 in the first quarter. That's a pretty good outcome.
Yeah.
I don't think they were egregiously terrible decisions in either case. I just think, Kansas City, they what killed them in a lot of ways still was that the fumble on the kickoff, right?
Yes.
That's when it really started to go downhill. But what an emotion! Football is the most emotional game.
It is.
Watching teams come apart is, and it's not, again, Houston fought back. They tried to hang in that game. But I thought especially in that Baltimore game, you saw a team that had just coasted all year. Suddenly they're all pointing at each other on the sideline saying, what are you doing?
And it was fascinating, too, hearing the Titans after the game talking about how, and this is going to probably drive Buffalo Bills fans around the bend, but essentially the defensive game plan mm-hmm. was borrowed from Buffalo's game 34 days ago against Baltimore. It was basically that the front gave the Ravens more different looks than Buffalo did, but it was essentially the idea of crowding the box and basically telling your corners, God love you, but you're on your own out there.
Yeah.
And try to force everything to the middle. This is a stat from that Kansas City comeback that to me kind of puts everything in context. In the final three quarters of the game, Kansas City didn't punt. They didn't have a possession that failed to end in a score, except for three kneel downs at the end of the game.
Yeah.
I watched that, watching that game and thinking back to the Oilers falling apart against Buffalo. Different, I understand, different situation there, but there was still the same kind of feel to that game, except Buffalo needed overtime.
Yeah, it's as though there's nothing you can do. And now that, that Kansas City offense and Mahomes, they got a lot of options and a lot of weapons. They're really, you know, that team's playing extraordinarily well right now. They're healthy right now.
I was really looking forward to Mahomes Jackson matchup.
Yeah, it would have been it would have been a blast. You know, and again, I think, you know, right now I would say Kansas City at home, you know, has a significant advantage over the Titans. Just don't fall behind though. Like, I'll tell you something. If I fall behind 24-0 to the Titans, you're not coming back.
No, because
they'll just going to run that guy at you and say, you try and stop him. Good luck to you. But you know, like, look, there's some very good. There's a couple of really potentially great Super Bowl, sexy Super Bowl matchups here. And you know, I flipped a ration note in the day after the Vikings debacle. But you know, we are, you know, living in this kind of golden age of quarterbacking. There's some. Yeah, like Deshaun Watson lost that football game, but he's a tremendous quarterback. You know, Patrick Mahomes is a guy who's going to be, you know, if he stays healthy another 3 years, is going to be a Hall of Fame quarterback. You know, he's already doing things that I haven't seen guys doing. And I know Lamar Jackson melted down, but, you know, had an extraordinary year. Where it's the notion that NFL football is kind of boring and plodding and predictable. Mm-hmm. Like, that went out the window with Bill Walsh, which was quite a while ago. But the game right now is fun. You know, like those games are fun to watch.
And the game is the quarterbacking the game right now is just absolutely outrageous.
Yeah, no, it's the game. We will probably in the last 10 years have watched 10 of the greatest quarterbacks in history.
Oh, absolutely. Dan Graziano of ESPN joins us. We got our phones back. We don't have our phones back. Travis, you lied. Oh, we're not. Oh, okay. All right. So we'll be joined by Dan Graziano at the top.
You're all excited there.
I was all excited because we got our phones back. We need our phones back. Dan Graziano of ESPN joins us, and we'll break down the NFL playoffs. We have Arash Madani and Scott MacArthur as well, and the breaking news that Mr. Brunt and myself have been talking about, the Major League Baseball throwing the book at the Houston Astros.
Several books.
The team will forfeit their 2020 and 2021 first and second round picks. And the general manager, Jeff Luhnow, and manager A.J. Hinch will be suspended for a year. Alex Cora, the manager of the Boston Red Sox, who has been implicated in this in the Houston sign stealing scheme, in addition to one involving the Red Sox, will be dealt with it.
Dead man walking right now, I believe it would be the phrase.
Yeah. I'm just wondering why MLB Network just had Carlos Beltran's picture up there with the New York Mets. Anyhow, it is, as Mr. Brunt said, this is Chicago Black Sox.
I think that's the only thing. That's the closest thing, right? And, you know, kids, go look it up. You know, once upon a time, you know, the reason gambling is verboten in baseball to the degree it is, and the reason Pete Rose is banned from baseball goes all the way back to the Chicago White Sox throwing the World Series. And, you know, that changed the entire culture of the sport.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and that was and it led to all kinds of things, including ability to run a legal monopoly.
And I'll tell you another thing. As I was chatting, somebody pointed this out. We know that Major League Baseball views sports wagering it's a cornucopia. It's a financial cornucopia for them.
Everybody does, yeah.
Everybody does. But if you want to do that, to make that work, you've got to convince people that your game's on the up and up.
Yes, you do.
If they're going to spend their money on it. And I think there's a long game here for Rob Manfred in addition to the short-term game. If you're going to try to make hay with sports wagering, you better make sure that people want to wager in your games.
Is there some irony there? And you're making it safe for gambling?
Yeah. Make baseball safe for gambling. Return morality to baseball. Whoever thought that legalized gambling would open the door for morality? Our phones are back. We can take a break. Dan Graziano's next. It's Writer's Block on 590 360.
Now we introduce you to the hosts of Writer's Block. Jeff Blair and Stephen Brunt on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
So the news by now, if you just heard our update, Morgan Rielly of the Toronto Maple Leafs is out for 8 weeks with a fractured foot. This, of course, combines with the loss of Jake Muzzin, who also has a fractured foot, and Stephen Brunt, my co-host, one of the concerns that has managed to transcend both the Mike Keenan and both the Mike Babcock and Sheldon Keefe era has been this team's lack of defense. This team's what's your phrase? Conscious free offensive hockey.
I love it. My favorite kind of hockey.
It is.
As long as you got a goalie. Yeah, save us. You know, that's every once in a while you look back and say, please save us.
Well, look, and it's, I mean, there are people throughout the game. You know, our friend Brian Burke has been, while he's credited Kyle Dubas and Sheldon Keefe and the Leafs front office for a lot of things, and is openly skeptical about whether or not this type of hockey can work during the playoffs. And,
yeah.
And I just wonder, though, if you're the Leafs, right now, you know, you made the point in the last hour that does this change your approach at the trade deadline? I wonder if we're almost at the point where if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, it's not that you look at this year as a wash off, as a write off. You can't do it.
No, you're losing some guys, and you're going to have to rebuild defensively anyway.
Yeah.
So no, I think you've got to look at this year as a window, the window being open, and you've got to take your shot. Like I don't think this is a wait till next year situation at all. Like it's not, you know, crazy panicky. Your skill guys are all locked up, but they're going to have issues defensively next year, just contractually, right? They're going to have the Muzzin, Barry, both free agents, right? So you're going to have to repopulate the team defensively next year. And I'm not saying this means taking a step back, but it's going to be tricky because we know about where they are cap wise. But I think you have to look at the way the team has played since the coaching change. And say this is a team that can win. Now, you know, again, if it's not a team that can win, then you got a bigger problem, which is that you have built a team that can't win intentionally. Yeah. Like this is, not intentionally you can't win, but this is the team that Kyle Dubas wants. He built this team this way, in this image. He now has a guy who coaches it the way he wants it coached. They're playing the kind of hockey he wants to play. So he believes you can win to doing this. Your best player is one of the five best players in the league. There's a lot of things here which say, take your shot.
Yeah.
Again, we can all, you can be skeptical about it if you want and say, well, it's impossible. But if it's impossible to win playing this kind of hockey, they've got a larger systemic issue with this franchise.
The Leafs have announced that Rasmus Sundin will be called up and will join them for their game against New Jersey. That's probably... well, it's the least they can do, really.
Well, it's first thing, yeah.
You're looking, again, you can't put it any other way. You are without your two most dependable defensemen. One of them's going to be out for a minute, again, 2 months, at which point he will be reassessed. A guy's heel at a different pace. But, you know, suddenly now you're looking at Tyson Barrie, Justin Hall, Martin Marincin.
Yeah, you got to go and
Travis Dermott.
You got to go and get somebody.
And Rasmus Sandin.
You have to go and get somebody. I don't see any way where you don't go out and get somebody at the deadline or before the deadline,
But can you do that and also address the backup goaltender situation?
I think the backup goaltender situation I think that's what it is. Yeah. He's not your worst problem right now suddenly.
No.
You know, your worst problem right now, they've survived with him of late.
Right.
Your worst problem right now is depth on the blue line and quality on the blue line and depth of quality on the blue line. And that's going to come. You know, that won't come cheaply.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's an imperative now to make that move. I just can't see how you don't do that. And again, the problem is the rest of the league knows that.
Yes.
You know, they absolutely know the spot you're in. And A, you're going to be competing for those guys with other teams. And B, everybody knows you're desperate.
Gord Stellick, by the way, host of our Leafs Nation, or co-host of our Leafs Nation pre- and post-game, will join us in a few minutes to discuss... well, where the Leafs go from here. Again, Morgan Rielly out for a minimum of 8 weeks. And this along with a fractured foot. Jake Muzzin already out with a fractured foot. And we know that Morgan Rielly has played. He's said that he's been playing all year with a nagging injury. I don't know if you would consider a fractured foot necessarily to be a nagging
injury. Oh, no.
Now, if he's played through a fractured foot all this time, then... you know, he's gone up in my estimation even more than he already was.
Yeah, it sounded like some, you know, again, upper body-ish something. But, you know, a lot of people...
Like a sports hernia-ish thing or some sort of...
Yeah, core injury, as we say these days, right? And you know, I think a lot of people have watched him play this year and said he doesn't quite look like himself, and he hasn't. You know, he hasn't been as explosive as he can be.
Wow. Okay, now we've got... just. Interrupt here. Jim Crane, the owner of the Houston Astros, just announcing that he has fired Jeff Luhnow.
Whoa.
And AJ Hinch. pretty clear, I guess, the Astros aren't appealing. The Houston Astros been told to forfeit a 2020, 2021 first and second round draft picks. They've been fined $5 million. Their general manager, Jeff Luhnow, and AJ Hinch were suspended for the season by the commissioner's office about an hour ago. The owner of the Houston Astros, Jim Crane, just announcing as we speak that, well, in addition, well, they're not really suspended now. They have been fired from their positions by the Houston Astros. And this gets to, now they've both got some term left in their contract, but I don't know, does this come under cause?
You'd have to look at the little tiny print. This is a question for a lawyer. But yeah. And again, I'm not sure those kind. That's not the standard player contract where you could refer to it. I have no idea how those contracts are written. But I would think this would probably fall under firing with cause. You know, you've got a pretty good documentation.
I don't remember anything like this.
Nope.
I don't remember anything like this.
No, again, remember the things that are sort of like this, right? Yeah. That the Saints stood by, you know, they brought back Sean Payton after the bounty thing. You know, the Patriots obviously brought back Tom Brady. I don't remember whether they fired the two schmucks who deflated the footballs, but generally organizations have circled the wagons in these situations around their people and said, yeah, it's a bad thing, but we're going to bring him back. And again, remember, you are firing a guy who, love him or not, is the most successful executive in baseball right at this moment. And you're firing a guy who is the model of the modern manager in a lot of ways, right? Everyone in baseball has been looking for the next AJ Hinch.
Yeah. And this is, again, well, now we've talked about Alex Cora, the Boston Red Sox manager, and we've talked about his situation. He has been implicated in this. There's an investigation going on in the Boston Red Sox right now. Steven, I wonder if we're at the point where Alex Cora ends up.
Well, it's almost like somebody has set the standard here, right?
Yeah.
And it'll be, Alex Cora's in deep trouble, as we alluded to, because he's implicated in both of these things. And it's almost like the methodology, you know, went from one town to another through him, like that he perhaps invented it, mm-hmm. or at least brought it along and brought it to his new job. That's with the implication in the stuff I've read already, trying to get through it quickly. So if AJ Hinch got a year and then got fired, I would think Alex Cora is vulnerable. You know, I think there's a potential for Alex Cora getting more than a year, number one, because, you know, it's kind of, it's double the crime in some ways. He did it in two different places. But it also, for John Henry, the ownership of the Boston Red Sox, there's somebody's thrown down here and said, this is the response.
Well, and there's also, there's another sort of a little, I mean, this thing's got tentacles. I know Rob Manfred enough to know that he's probably set a red line. He said, I'm only going to take this as far. You don't want to go all the way. You don't want to find out that 20 of your teams have been cheating. But Carlos Beltran, who was just named manager of the New York Mets, is referred to in the commissioner's statement as having been aware of this and having had a role in this. So that you'll wonder what happens to Carlos Beltran. Now, again, the commissioner's statement is very clear. There'll be no action against players who were with the Astros back then.
And I think for reasons you alluded to in the previous hour, which is that that's a quagmire.
That's a quagmire. You have to go through the Players Association if you're going to do anything. Now, Carlos Beltran is not a member of the Players Association. Is there, you know, is that the next step? We have, by the way, because this is a remarkable statement, Jim Crane, the Astros owner and chairman, stepping to the podium. And this is how he made news just a couple of minutes ago.
First, let me start out. Thank you all for coming on short notice. Today is a very difficult day for the Houston Astros. MLB did a very thorough investigation, and the Astros fully cooperated. We accept their decisions and findings and penalties. We work very hard to build this organization for our employees, fans, sponsors, community, and the city to all be proud. With that being said, there's two very important points I want to make today. I have higher standards for the city and the franchise, and I'm going above and beyond MLB's penalty. Today, I have made the decision to dismiss A.J. Hinch and Jeff Luhnow. We need to move forward with a clean slate, and the Astros will become stronger, a stronger organization because of this today. You can be confident that we will always do the right thing and will not have this happen again on my watch. With that being said, you guys have a copy.
Okay, that is a statement from Astros owner Jim Crane just a few minutes ago.
Wow.
Now, of course, this is not
a parallel situation, but this is an organization that took a lot of flack, rightly probably, for dealing the way they welcomed in Roberto Osuna and kind of conveniently allowed some of that. They made a lot of grand statements about where they stood on a variety of things. But the other part of this is, you know, I was thinking, like A.J. Hinch, you know, both these guys were suspended without pay. A.J. Hinch never going to work in baseball again, is he?
I don't see how he can.
He's not on the ineligible list.
He doesn't have to be in the ineligible list. Look, Barry Bonds was hired as a hitting coach. And again, I'm not.
Yeah, as was my own and Mark McGuire.
I'm not doing the false equivalency thing here. Because as I said, Barry Bonds made a decision. This to me is different than Barry Bonds' situation. But if you'd ever told me. Well, if you had ever told me that Barry Bonds would be a coach or that Alex Rodriguez would now be considered one of the grand old men of the game, I would have laughed at you. This is different because, there's something oddly systemic about this with Luhnow, with Hinch, with Cora, maybe with Carlos Beltran. Should also be mentioned that the Houston Astros Mike Elias, their former front office guy, is now the general manager of the Baltimore Orioles.
It's the tree, right?
Everybody's got an administrative tree.
Dave Hudgens with the Toronto Blue Jays.
Dave Hudgens, bench coach with the Toronto Blue Jays. But I'd be hard pressed to see AJ Hinch managing again.
Maybe there's an appropriate period of penance when you go away, but. Look, the Astros, had they chosen to, could have ridden this out, said, that's a stiff penalty, we accept the penalty, we're sorry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jim Crane could have stood up there and said, and then still brought them back in 2021. Like, I think they could have gotten away with that if they had chosen to. So it's an interesting decision organizationally to say no.
Yeah.
Because I think they could have ridden this one out.
Lots going on today, as I said. Gord Stelick is host of our Leafs Nation pre- and post-game. He will join us. We'll talk about Morgan Rielly, the Monday roundtable. We'll even squeeze some Raptors talk in there somehow, as I said. It's Writer's Block with Jeff Blair and Stephen Brunt on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, so Stephen Brunt returns to Writer's Block and all hell breaks
loose. Yeah, this is one of the day of days.
It is the day of days.
All happened right at 2:00 and then 2:10. Just thank you, the powers that be. If we could spread it out over the next 6 months, you know, one of those dog days when nothing's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. The Monday roundtable, MacArthur and Madani. Will join us.
Nothing to talk about today.
Cheating Astros, NFL, and Morgan Rielly out for a minimum of 2 months. Gord Stelick is co-host of our Leafs Nation pre- and post-game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and he joins Stephen Brunt and yours truly on Writer's Block. So, about that defense corps, Mr. Stelick, what do the Leafs do now? Where do they go?
You know, I've been listening to you guys as well. So like you were saying, boy, all these news breaking, it's given you chock full topics, but not really what you want to have if you're a Toronto Maple Leaf fan. The injury news, you might be, I mean, the expectation now is he would be back for the playoffs. As you guys were talking about before, he's been playing hurt. Now, they say this was a block shot, so it sounds like this was a separate injury suffered last night against the Florida Panthers. So maybe it's a blessing that whatever else has been ailing him, you can sort of hopefully take care of the whole kit and caboodle that way. So if he's going to be back for the playoffs, I think you ride it out. You may be more apt to try to get a depth D come the trade deadline. Right now, you're going to try Rasmus Sandin. You're going to, you know, try things from within. So, but you're not going to do a Jake Muzzin type trade, giving up, a prospect, a draft pick, and a prospect playing in junior. You know, you would do one of those kind of add on late type, you know, the modern day version of Michel Petit.
Right.
Does that, well, and you know, but you know, I just wonder about the kind of margin for error here, Gord. Like, this is obviously, you know, this team at its best is, you know, we've seen it in the last, up until this Florida game. They have been successful under, since the coaching change. They've been fun to watch. But, you know, there's not that much wiggle room in terms of where this team is and, you know, being a, not being a playoff team or being a first round exit team or, you know, there's the stakes, it seems to me. I'm just wondering if the stakes are high enough, Gord, that you have to, that, you know, maybe you do try and do something a little more dramatic, that you don't try and ride it out with what you've got, because, you know, we're not totally sure what Sandin's going to do, right? Like we're not totally sure what else they do have.
Well, the thing is, I mean, Toronto really is the East Winnipeg, that solid goaltending, great young talent up front, but real questionable D. There's no question. And you know, Steven, I hear what you're saying, but unless you're getting the modern day version of Nick Lidstrom in a trade that could eat 30 minutes, you're probably just going to get more of the same that's still available. But, you know, Winnipeg claimed a couple of guys on waivers as stopgap measures. I mean, that's kind of what's out there. Whatever teams are looking to trade guys, I mean, maybe there's not usually the big stud defenseman out there unless hey, PK Subban. Do you decide that maybe you go big for PK Subban and let New Jersey take contracts to make it whole this year and then figure it out next year? I don't know. I mean, I don't know if that's the answer, but that's the kind of guy that could be out there, but you're taking a huge chance that way. If there was a quality trade to be made for a defenseman, I'd be all for it. But otherwise, I could just see it be more a stopgap.
Well, and, you know, PK Subban's looked like the ghost of PK Subban a lot of nights too, right?
So totally. Totally.
So I'm not sure what you'd be getting there. How much... You know, with Riley going on IR, like, where are they? Do you have any sense of kind of where they are? How much wiggle room they have cap wise between now and the end of the year?
Well, again, as we all know, there's the full time capologists that figure it out on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that, you know, like it's sort of like Colonel Sanders' secret herbs and spices.
Yes.
That's trying to figure it all out. But if you do the simple math. You know, earlier in the year, you lost some big guys like Tavares and Marner who had significant contract hits. Jake Muzzin and Morgan Riley, not quite the same. But, yeah, it should free up some element to allow you to do something. But they know they're in cap hell from the word go. I mean, they're a team that if they were going to get a significant salary back would have to do something very creative that way. So, you know, that's why you see a lot of the trades now. If you are getting something, and if you're getting something from a non-playoff team, they'll assume the cap hit or a chunk of the cap hit to help make it happen. So I would assume if the Maple Leafs are looking to make that kind of deal, that would have to be part of it as well.
So initially, in the short term, we know Rasmus Sandin is up here. I'm going to ask you to play coach a bit. How do you get these defense pairings straightened up? I mean, I would think it has to be. Does it have to be Tyson Barry plus somebody else, or, you know, how do you go about doing this?
You mean about who Tyson Barry plays with?
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of, I don't know. It's been like, it's been this whole thing. Finding the right buddy system has been a little problematic this year. I think the ultimate thing, Jeff, though, is, you know, they put Tyson Barry on the first power play. Sheldon Keefe has really embraced Tyson Berry, we got you for what you did in Colorado. So it's been like a whole new lease that way. And to be honest, he's played a lot better, but, you know, hasn't been great. I mean, this is his chance to really shine, you hope. I mean, this is the one guy that can play the Morgan Rielly role and hopefully play some more minutes would be him. You try Sandin, he's got some offensive upside, but, you know, you want to protect him and don't put him out against top pairs and he doesn't see huge minutes. You got a Justin Hall's been a huge and pleasant surprise, and you know that's always great if something works internally, you know, that way. So, and then Jake Muzzin is kind of a week to week proposition. So that's something I'm curious. Like, is he 4-5 weeks away or 2 weeks away? Because you can stem the tide a bit better when Jake Muzzin is back in the lineup.
What did you, Gord? What did you make of that the collapse in Florida? Was it like the sunstroke game? You know, like I know, you know, weird things happen when teams go on those Florida trips sometimes and they get a day off. But what, you know, it was kind of the worst flaws in this team, kind of all writ large in one night, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the worst in the brief Sheldon Keith era. I thought the worst one was that Pittsburgh game that convinced them to fire Mike Babcock, you know, way back when. But it's funny, Steven and Jeff, it was this one-off trip on a Sunday night. Like, Florida can't sell tickets, and they got a Sunday night home game up against NFL playoffs. Head-scratcher. It's usually a two-game trip when the Leafs go down to Florida, so this is a one game.
Yeah.
All kinds of time off, which, you know, they complained about, or not complained, but they brought up earlier in the season about not having enough days off. And, you know, you got to go out and start the game, at least like you mean business. I mean, I'm sure athletes are very professional nowadays, but this would make you think, what the hell were these guys doing in Florida? This is, you know, I put out a tweet, which got very little response because nobody really cares about Florida and Tampa Bay as much up here. But this is the battle. Like, they had four games against Florida left and three against Tampa Bay. Now they have three. These Florida games are the four-point battles. It's not the traditional rivals like Montreal, Buffalo, Boston, and Ottawa. And that's why I was glad John Tavares, when he was asked after the game, like, you know, is this one of those games you just got to, you know, throw out and get back to scratch? Well, there's an element of that's what you do. But he said, you know, no, this is inexcusable. I mean, this was a very important game. And I don't think the average Leaf fan can think of the Florida Panther games as really important games. But really, this is kind of their arch rival because they play them a considerable number of times from here on in for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and they're breathing right down their necks. You know, they're offensively you saw that. They're an offensively talented team. You know, and you say the other side of the Florida equation, Tampa's awake. You know, they're back to being Tampa again. So, yeah, those games, you know, Gordo, you add those games up, you know, that could decide a playoff spot, never mind playoff seeding. You know, really, that's a lot of points.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, as of last night, it was seven, you know, four against Florida, three against Tampa Bay, now three against each of them. And the good part is Leafs have banked a lot of points. I mean, you do have to keep things in perspective, but also they haven't won outright in the last three games. So you can't, you know, the peaks and valleys, you got to make sure the valleys aren't as low and as long as when you struggle to make the playoffs or don't make the playoffs. So they've got three home games this week. And then they got a break, and they got to really set a message before they hit. They got no excuses before they hit into the break. I mean, Freddie Anderson's in a bit of a funk. This isn't vintage Freddie Anderson goaltending. That happens with every goaltender some part of the season, and you've got to be able to, you know, find other ways to win games because Freddie Anderson won a lot of games for you early on.
I would think, too, you know, as you look at the Florida teams, and you're clearly right. I mean, I think we can just say it. The Leafs' road to the playoffs goes through Florida. It just does. It goes through not just the Florida Panthers, but Tampa Bay as well. The other thing I'd throw out there about the Florida Panthers is they're coached by a guy who knows a bit about getting a team into the playoffs.
Yeah, he's okay.
He knows when to go to the whip hand.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, hey, give Mike Babcock credit for the first couple of years here. Look what Lou did with New York Islanders and Barry Trotz. And, yeah, it's just understood that there's very few great coaches, and a great coach can make a huge amount of difference, and that's the route the Florida Panthers went. And a guy like Mike Kitchen, as far as their D-go, you know, his always his Sundance to his Butch Cassidy and a real quality guy as far as, you know, they sat Mike Matheson out one game. He was a healthy scratch, and last night he played as many minutes as anybody else. I mean, it gets that process that players will buy in because these guys have three Stanley Cup rings as well and know about how to cultivate and get the best out of the guys at a different level.
How do you think, I know this is a horribly unfair question, but Sheldon Keefe has been getting a lot of credit for being, you know, he's kind of like the new age guy, you know, kind of sympathetic, you know, is a guy thinking about playing players in their hometown, things of that nature. I mean, he cares. It seems to me from a distance, Gord, that he cares for more than just simply the nuts and bolts of the team. But how does he, what does he do now to get their attention? What are you expecting from him? I'm not saying bag skating or something like that, but what does he do to get their attention? Is it hard to do that now that, you know, your stud defenseman's gone for 2 months?
Yeah, well, he hadn't been playing like the stud defenseman as well, but still it's tough. He leads them in minutes and all those things. And,
right.
You know, injuries are a part of the game, and this will be the challenge for Sheldon Keith. The other coaching changes that were based on merit, San Jose hasn't worked out. We'll find out what gives with Nashville. You know, it's recent. New Jersey didn't work out. It's got better of late. So what Sheldon Keefe was able to do early on is what Craig Berube did last year in St. Louis. Like, really, it only happens to generally like one team a year, that mid-season coaching change. So Jeff and Steven, there lies the challenge. And the upside is Sheldon Keefe. I think it's an upside is that he coached 13 guys in the organization. He created a winning, or helped create a winning culture with the Toronto Marlies. And then when he came up here, the guys he didn't coach, he actually has used them more and given them more minutes and, you know, helped them rise to the challenge in being the elite players. So this is part of the ebbs and flows of a regular season. And, you know, it comes back to the players, but it also the coach, what he can do to make a difference. And this is where he's an unproven NHL coach. And this is virgin territory for him right now. The first, I think the first kind of funk, and you don't want it to be like Montreal felt before their game against Ottawa on Saturday, where you get that horrible, ugly feeling when you get in a deep, deep slump. So that's the challenge.
I think a good team, but you know, a good, healthy team, you know, the good, healthy dressing room's got to self-correct, doesn't it, Gord? Like, isn't this like, it's not? I don't think you can go and yell at these guys. They were humiliated.
Well, they've been together for long enough. We're not talking about guys who are in their first year of being together.
And I know, obviously, Marner stood up and spoke and surprised some people with the way he spoke about it, but. You know, this is for Tavares, and this is for some of the veteran guys in that room, and they've got to self-correct here, I think. You know, that's going to tell you a little bit of what they are, it seems to me.
Yeah, bang on. The bag skate days are done. Forget it. And you're right about it. It's just, you know, Paul Maurice, and we've talked about it, just articulated really well about how he's had to evolve as a coach. Like, he's been an active coach, and how you've had to evolve. And same with players, you've had to evolve, and you got to understand there's a different era, so there's a respect about, you know, an expectation about being leaders nowadays internally, because coaches don't have that ticket down to the minor leagues or the bag skate or all that kind of things. And it's showtime. There are no more excuses. This is not a rebuild anymore. And, you know, Mike Babcock paid a price, but a lot of those players there are the ones that have helped turn things around and were a big part of the problem and had to correct it. And now this little blip, they're the ones that you just can't have that kind of effort, though, for starters. You're right. You got to say, hey, that's a one-off. It happened. That's like your worst day at work, because that one's unacceptable. So in this case, you're looking for some kind of message Tuesday against a much better New Jersey Devil team, but still really a very winnable game for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Gordy, before we let you scoot, what's your take on Ray Shiro and the departure from the Devils?
Boy, as you talk about, I'm going to look forward to listen more about what's going on in Houston on the baseball side. I was baffled. I was mystified. I mean, it was this hurriedly called meeting, and I hate to be a, you know, thinking that there's something deeper, but best case scenario, they're thinking the team is 6-2-2 in their last 10 games. They just won their two biggest games on the weekend. The first one against Washington Saturday, Tampa Bay, they won after they fired Ray Shiro. And I'm thinking, okay, do they think they're in the hunt again and they don't like Ray Shiro at all, so they're getting rid of him so he can't make any more trades? Or is something go amiss? And, you know, when the owner mentioned Marty Brodeur's name, okay, it's good to have your name mentioned by an owner, okay? And I just thought, geez, I wonder if, and I'm not saying they were out to get him, but I just that the owner decided he had enough. Tom Fitzgerald was going to be the guy, and they love Hall of Fame players. They love Stanley Cup rings. And Marty Brodeur is going to be more involved. And I guess it may have been untenable internally. I don't know why it couldn't have waited till the end of the season. And so I think there was something a little bit more amiss internally. But either way, Tom Fitzgerald, former Leaf, this guy deserves it. This guy's paid his dues, and he's a quality hockey guy. And Ray Shiro's his mentor. He said that many times over. So that even adds to my bewilderment. But anyway, they're 1-0 with the new guy, and they'll be here on Tuesday.
Yeah, they go back to their days with the Penguins. It really makes you wonder if maybe there wasn't a power struggle there.
Yeah.
You know, as quite often is the case, the owner or the chairman of the team will go with the former player, the franchise icon.
Marty Brodeur is a force, too. So I thought the same thing when I saw his name mentioned, Gord.
Yeah, because don't forget, like, you know, Marty Brodeur, it's not like he's the passive guy sitting back.
Exactly.
And, you know, he went to St. Louis because he was pissed off, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he didn't finish as a Devil, and he finished as a player in St. Louis and briefly as an executive. And then, you know, he came back to New Jersey, and, you know, it wasn't just about, you know, mending fences. It was about he wanted, like the Luke Robitaille and everybody else, he wanted a position with some bite in it. And I'm sure that was, you know, in the cards.
Yeah. Gordy, we're going to let you scoot. We really appreciate you joining us in an emergency situation on a day where the phones were wonky. Thanks, man, as always.
Well, I wait for more breaking news. This is the afternoon for it.
Yeah, just something's got to happen the next
hang
time.
Around. Somebody's going to end up. This would be a good day for a news dump. If you're a baseball team, be a very good day for a news dump. See ya.
See you, Gord.
See you, guys.
Gord Stellick, co-host of our Leafs Nation pre- and post-game, along with Nick Alberga. Leafs' next game is tomorrow night against the New Jersey Devils. Ben Nicholson-Smith is baseball editor at sportsnet.ca. Big news in baseball today. The Houston Astros have fired their general manager and their manager after both were suspended by baseball commissioner Rob Manfred for their role in an institutional sign-stealing scheme, I guess we can call it that, in the 2017 season. Ben Nicholson-Smith will join us. It's Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet 360. Ben Nicholson-Smith joining Stephen Brent and Jeff Blair. Let me read you something from Commissioner Rob Manfred's press release. Those of you who don't know, the Houston Astros have fired their general manager and manager after they were suspended for a year by Commissioner Rob Manfred. The Astros have also been dinged with a $5 million fine, and they'll lose their first and second round picks in 2020 and 2021. This is from Jeff Passan. This is from the 9-page press release sent out by Rob Manfred and handing down his discipline. But while no one can dispute that Luno's baseball operations department is an industry leader in its analytics, it's very clear to me that the culture of the baseball operations department, manifesting itself in the way its employees are treated, its relations with other clubs, and its relations with the media and external stakeholders, has been very problematic. The commissioner goes on to call them, quote, describe them as having a, quote, insular culture that valued and rewarded results over other considerations. Ben, that's about as far as you can go in describing an organization as stinking to high heaven as any commissioner can go.
Exactly, because you know he works for 30 teams, one of which is the Houston Astros, and yet here he is criticizing them in pretty unfiltered terms. I mean, it's clear that the Astros deserve this criticism. His investigation turned up, you know, confirmation that they were cheating, that the reports out there were in fact true, and that, you know, that will leave a stain on this Astros team that we've watched for the last few years.
It's interesting though, that stuff, you know, like in baseball, like no one loved that organization, right? And you could always write that off, say, well, they're jealous, right? Yeah. These guys, they're the gold standard. They're arrogant, but look, they back it up. Look what they did. They tore the thing right down to the studs and built it up, and they're the smartest and they're the best and the most successful. And now they're the cheatinest. And it's so all of that other stuff about the way they treated people, and look, by the way, this is a good day for the media. You know,
Rosenthal and Evan Drellich are both referred to in the first paragraph of the commissioner's report.
Well, and number two, the whole Taubman thing, right? It's, you know, like these are tough days for people, you know, in not just reporting about pretend stuff like baseball, but reporting about real stuff, who have the veracity of what they report questioned constantly. So, you know, A, it's great that this started with some really good reporting, and B, in the case of the Taubman thing, that's they stood up against the abuse of a reporter doing her job in the clubhouse. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's just one for our business, you know. But yeah, I think this is that's an indictment of this, the culture of this organization, way beyond just the specifics of stealing signs.
For sure. I mean, it's extends so far, and it's really hard to tell exactly how much Jeff Luhnow knew or AJ Hinch knew at the time. Pretty clearly the players knew and Alex Cora knew.
I think somebody had to be saying, why are they banging that garbage can with a bat?
Right.
You know, you'd have to be pretty oblivious.
What about the guy on Twitter who started the whole...
John Boy.
Who was it?
John Boy. Right?
John Boy. Some guy on Twitter said, hey, listen, look at this. This is tape. Here's the banging. And I first looked, I thought, okay, come on, somebody's doctored.
It's like the man in white or whatever,
well,
right?
Yeah, it was pretty clear.
Yeah, no, and good for them as well. I mean, it's evident that the Astros were in on all of this. They did it by design. They benefited from it. Who knows how much? It's always hard to say on that front, but it's something that, you know, I don't think the teams will be so quick to repeat this sort of behavior now that these suspensions have been handed out.
Is this a worse situation for baseball than the steroid scandal?
I think it's better. I don't actually think it's that
better.
Bad for baseball.
Oh, you don't think it's that bad? Series teams have cheated.
Yeah, I don't think it's as bad as the steroid thing.
Okay.
I mean, if you guys
I'm
disagree,
intrigued. You have my attention.
Yeah, I just think, you know, like it's bad, but cheating in baseball has happened forever and it will continue to happen. And they have an answer for this that's pretty clear. And they're able to discipline it. So I think one of the things about the steroid era that's so hard is you never know. And even with guys who have never been linked to it, there's maybe a seed of doubt in your mind. And that could be the same with teams and sign stealing now. But at least there's a clear answer. We know they did it. Everyone agrees. They stole signs.
Yeah. No, I'll go with you at that. It is clear.
And the league and the commissioner's office has taken action.
Yeah, they're not complicit.
Yeah,
you know, as they were in the steroid.
That's a nice way to put it.
Yeah, they were. It was hard to figure out who the good guys were in the steroid thing. I'm afraid that's part of the tricky part of where the moral high ground was. And you know, Jeff and I have talked about this. It's you know that where the line is drawn between what's illegal and what's legal in terms of performance enhancing science, because you know it's arbitrary, right? But this is clear cut. I guess that is the biggest difference here. And the commissioner's action is decisive. You know, this isn't the Dowd report leaking out, you know, tarring a whole bunch of guys without due process. Due process took place here.
It appears as if it certainly did. We just have you for a few more minutes. Look, we know baseball's going into this future now where you know, Hannah Kaiser of Yahoo Sports talked about possibility of experimentation with pitcher-to-catcher communications or pitching coach-to-pitcher communications. We know that the electronic strike zone is coming. It is. Understanding that there was some really, really base rudimentary stuff banging on a garbage can that was a reflection of some stuff going on behind the scenes, some high-tech stuff going on behind the scenes, is this going to give baseball, do you think, a cause to stop for a minute and just think about how much technology you want in this game? Or is that, you know, are we talking about two completely different things?
I think there's a relationship there. It probably is a logical time to do it, right? And to try to, I don't know, game out exactly what it will be like when you have these headsets or when you have these electronic strike zones. I mean, what are the potential unforeseen consequences?
Right, because the problem I think that needs to be stressed here, too, is, yeah, there's been a rich tradition of sign stealing in baseball, but this stuff went on after the commissioner's office sent out memorandum to teams and Joe Torre spoke to managers and general managers, said, look, you can do this, you can't do this. You can do this, you can't do this. That's
around technology.
Yeah.
And this is a lot different than someone on second base, you know, tapping his batting helmet because he sees there's a, you know, curveball coming or whatever it is. Like, this is a totally different level of sign stealing and one that we, you know, I think collectively we don't want that in the game of baseball. It just becomes, it stops being the same sport that we're used to, and I don't think in a good way. But yeah, I think to your point, Jeff, it makes sense to look into that.
It does taint their achievement. Like, you can argue about how much, you know, and we'll never, it's hard to know. But it did give them a leg up, right? It did give them an advantage.
Well, if it didn't work, you'd think they would have stopped it.
Well, exactly. And in fact, it appears they worked to perfect it.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, yeah, I don't think they're going to put an asterisk next to the World Series, but, you know, it's not overreaction to say that World Series is tainted. I don't think that's an overreaction.
At all. And I think that's part of the reason that Rob Manfred is issuing this report. I think Major League Baseball is fine with that. Fine having it be tainted because, you know, it should be according to, you know, any sense of of what's reasonable. If you present these rules and everyone agrees to follow them, and then one team goes out and completely ignores them, then it probably makes sense for their title not to be on the same level as everyone else.
Yeah. In less than a minute, AJ Hinch and Jeff Luhnow are both, until today, were both, you know, pretty successful baseball executives. Does either one of them get back in the game?
I could see Hinch getting back in. Luhnow is a tougher sell to me, because what owner is going to invest his franchise with Jeff Luhnow? Hinch, though, very experienced, very...
And you can do penance if you're a manager, essentially, too, I think.
I think you can, and he's versatile, too. I mean, AJ Hinch was an AGM for a while. He's worked in player development. I think there are a lot of things that he could do, but Luhnow, I don't necessarily see it.
Yeah.
Wow. I wonder where you go to do your penance, though. You know, like, that's it's a funny one, right? Because he's not getting paid.
Na-na-na.
Well...
Going to that would be interesting. Would you hire him as a TV analyst?
It's a really good question.
I think I would. Yeah. I think he'd be pretty good.
You know, I think
a lot to say.
Yeah.
Maybe he's kind of a counterintelligence guy.
Do
right?
Need,
that's maybe what they should hire him for.
I don't know. I don't pretend to know what the regulations are surrounding their particular situation, but I will be keenly interested in hearing what AJ Hinch has to say. At some point, I don't know if there's like a gag order or what, but I would be really interested in hearing what they have to say. Before we let you run, because we do have a few more minutes, there's still some personnel decisions to be made out there in baseball. There seems to be a sense now that Donaldson, Castellanos, and Ozuna, that there's kind of a triangle here, the Cardinals, the Cubs, the Braves. Somebody's going to do something, and at some point, stuff's going to be settled. Do you think the Jays... Once that's done, would you expect to see them add another position player? Or?
I'm not expecting that at
You're
this
not,
point.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they would. They went into the offseason hoping to add at center field. And you know, at this point, it seems to me at least less likely that they'll be able to accomplish that. Mm-hmm. But, you know,
there aren't any in free agency, really.
Right? I mean, there's your Jared Dyson's, your...
Yeah, not to get you anywhere.
Yeah.
Maybe by trade. But
right. And they've explored that to some extent. You know, Jackie Bradley Jr., Jock Peterson, those types of names come up. But... I don't know that there's traction on that front. So I'm not really anticipating much for the Jays. And I didn't think they were going to sign Ryu. So I've been wrong a lot of times about the Jays this offseason, let alone, you know, years past. But I'm not expecting it. I think that they're pretty much done.
Powder blue uniforms, though, we're led to believe?
Something. Is it electric blue?
Oh, God. If they could bring the powder blue uniforms
You'd
back,
like that?
I would love that.
Is it, how often you want to see that, though, in the course of a year?
Not very.
Twice. I could do it twice, four times a year, you know.
I love the whites and I like the blue and the blue tops and the white bottoms, but I'd be okay with the powder blue in like an afternoon game or something like that, something to differentiate it.
Yeah.
I would.
I think once a month. They have such a good uniform already.
The blue, the once they adopted that blue, it changed everything.
I just think it's an era thing, though. Like, the powder blue uniforms to me is 70s baseball.
Yeah.
You know, it's big hair.
There were some pretty horrible uniforms in the 70s, as I recall.
I don't know. I wouldn't say horrible, but, you know, big hair and lots of fun stuff going on in cookie cutter stadiums and things of that nature. It is Blue Jays Winterfest this weekend. I presume you will be out there.
That's the plan. Yeah.
I saw that they had the boys in Calgary, and Trent Thornton, credit to him, mm-hmm. handled the Battle of Alberta question very well during the hockey telecast.
What did he say?
He said, I'm in Calgary. I'm cheering for the Flames.
Very political.
That's the right answer.
Yeah. Very smart. Somebody, I don't know who it was with the organization, maybe Jamie Camp, somebody who was out there suggested, hey, if you get asked about this, this is where you go. Ben, thanks so much for joining us.
Anytime.
Arash Madani. Scott MacArthur will join us. It's the Monday Roundtable. By God, we've got a lot to talk about on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360.
Jeff Blair and Stephen Brunt on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, it's the Monday Roundtable and Writer's Block. It is Blair. It is Brunt.
It is Arash Madani. It is Scott MacArthur. I'm glad to see both of you fellows are in fine form. I was a little concerned when you was a Vikings fan and Mr. MacArthur was a 49ers fan when I was told that you were going to be watching the game together. And then I thought, that's a Vikings. They know what's going to happen. Arash knows what's going to happen. I know what's going to happen. MacArthur knows what's going to happen.
Well, we just sat there for 4 hours and both of us just bitched about our respective teams. I think that's all it was. This is what's wrong. This is what's wrong. This is what's wrong. This is why we'll never win. Well, that's what I was saying.
Yeah, no, wait a second. What did you say about this?
I was going to say, Scott, I'm not getting that same vibe from Scott.
When Garoppolo, was that the second quarter? Garoppolo threw his interception.
There might
have been some foul language.
Yes.
But
your coffee table's not the same. It's a little.
Well, that's because I slammed my fist down on one of the legs and it broke. No, that didn't happen. The best part, though, if you follow Arash on Twitter, you're well aware of his deep-seated affection for Kirk Cousins.
You like that? You like that?
In the third.
Get that smile off your face, Brunt. Look at you. I've never seen you happier.
I'm hearing things on the headphones. Yeah, you didn't hear. Yeah.
Anyhow.
In the.
You like that?
There's a drop.
Oh, yeah. I didn't hear it either. I missed it. In the third quarter.
You like that?
One of those Twitter rants to which we have all become so accustomed. Right. Played out verbally from my living room couch. It was 5 minutes of pure gold.
So what you're saying, he tweets like he talks, which is an art.
Absolutely.
I can't, because I'd be...
At one point, after a ridiculous 3rd and 13 dump-off for 2 yards, in a misdirection...
Come on, that helps your completion percentage, man. It helps your completion percentage.
Scotty, unprompted, just... Oh, grunted, good God.
I'm like, exactly. This is what I've been saying.
This is my wife. The hand gestures and everything. This is my life.
The good news is they're going to
keep him for another year.
Keep him for another year. What's Teddy Bridgewater doing these days?
I know. You heard that stuff on the broadcast about how that he would have been a 49er, right? But for the Garoppolo trade being offered up.
Right.
How different would your life have been?
How different the life would have been. Yeah. Shanahan would have taken him from Washington.
Right. He wanted him. That was his first. That was his first choice.
Fired this year. And...
I'd love to talk about the NFL, but we got a crisis to deal with. We'll get to it eventually. We've got a crisis we have to deal with. We'll deal with the Houston Astros later. That's the real. But the big news, the news that has stopped the sports world. No. Morgan Riley, fractured foot, 8 weeks out. Jake Muzzin's already out. Gentlemen, what do the Leafs do now? Because I know it's something you're going to be talking about for 3 hours tomorrow, Scott. You might as well.
Is it? Yeah, are you booking the show?
Nope, I've been told.
Oh, you've been told. Morgan Riley, the Houston Astros.
Sportsnet brought to you by Captain Mark. No, go ahead.
If we were talking about this morning before we knew the Riley details, this team, by virtue of its... performance last night, which I would diplomatically describe as not good, is just 1 point up on a playoff spot. It continues to pay the price and will continue to pay the price for its 9-10-1 start under Mike Babcock until the very end of this thing. Mm-hmm. And we can sit here and say that Morgan Riley has been dealing with whatever he's been dealing with and hasn't had a very good year.
Yeah.
But now the attrition, truly, I mean, the left side of that defense, we're about to find out the question that I didn't want to have to answer until next year.
Can Rasmus Sandin be a number one defenseman?
But can a team with Stanley Cup expectation, because let's be realistic, that's what this team should have. Whether it's realistic or not, we can debate. It should have that at this point. Can Travis Dermott and Rasmus Sandin carry the load on the left side of that defense for a considerable period of time? How much stock, how much dependency, they're required to do it now by virtue of Riley's injury, how much dependency can you have on 20, 21, 22-year-old somethings when you're trying to win a Stanley Cup?
What kind of ice time are these guys going to log?
Well, that's between Morgan Riley's injury and Jake Muzzin's injury, I mean, one of them's always on the ice for the most part. One of them's almost always on the ice. It's not easy.
This team is a Montreal Canadiens 2.5 week span that just concluded with the win against Ottawa. They're a 2.5 week, 3 week span. Mm-hmm. Going winless in 7 right now would not be ideal.
No, it wouldn't.
You don't want to start falling 2 to 3 wins i.e. 4 to 6 points out of a playoff spot with all these three-point games heading into the backstretch here. Like, they cannot afford.
You can only play catch-up for so long. They played catch-up after the first 20 games.
Yep.
And now they're going to have to play catch-up again. You're just going to run out of runway here if Riley's, you know, they're saying 8 weeks.
Reassessed after 8 weeks.
Yeah.
So.
Now, Mr. Stelnick disagreed with me when we had him on here because he thought they would that what you do is you stay the course and, you know, try and ride it out and eventually get those two guys back. And no one seems to know exactly when Muzzin's coming back. And you say, Riley, we're talking about right before the playoffs, right? 8 weeks plus. They've got a little bit of cap room now because of all these guys on IR.
Right.
Who knows? And, you know, like, yeah, your forward group is going to be great a year from now. They're great right now. Your skill guys, your top guys. But, you know, I think you're in a window. And I think if there's something I think you may have to take a risk at the deadline. You may have to go out and spend. You got to go. I think you got
to
do something.
I don't think it's a think. I think you have to.
Yeah.
Because you're getting these two guys on IR, so they're not cap hits. By the time especially Riley comes back, as you said, it's playoffs, you're talking about a week or two of a cap hit of his salary.
Yeah.
So what you then have, what you can actually artificially create for yourself is playoff depth on your blue line if you go overpay at the deadline for somebody. But at the same time, it allows you to somewhat tread water so you're not going to actually plunge too far down and try to play too much catch up. This is an absolute must for this team right now.
Yes, which means you're going to overpay, though.
So be it.
I know, but that's just everybody knows you're coming, right?
Yeah. This is your time, and this is your window, and this is what you're paying your goaltender. This is what you absolutely have to do.
And let's face it. I mean, to Brunt's point, you're going to have to overpay next year as well. Like you have to add at least one, probably two defensemen between now and the start of next season. You're going to overpay at some point. Get the guys in now.
Well, next season, you're going to need some of those young guys to play for you because you're going to need that flexibility payroll-wise, right? Yeah.
But you're still going to need, you know, you're going to need somebody other than Dermott and Hall and even Riley, because even if you re-sign Muzzin, I mean, you're still going to need at least one more established defenseman in there at some point next year.
Steven, what is an overpay?
Well,
because they don't have their first round pick.
No, you're right.
They had to
That's a great point.
To offload Patrick Marleau onto the Carolina Hurricanes and Jake Muzzin, who is a very good defenseman, but will never be in a Norris conversation.
No.
Cost them a first round pick last year.
Yes, he did.
So what are you going to get without your first round pick in 2020? You don't want to just kick the can down the road and trade the 2021 first round pick. I don't even know if a team would be interested in that at this point.
But I don't know what's available at the deadline for expiring contracts, but you're not looking at you can't have the top end guy.
Yeah.
Because that's going to cost you at least a one end something.
Yeah. And you don't, as you say, you don't have that to deal next year.
Right. So you're looking at a second tier defenseman, just somebody
to try. Gord Stellick said a Michel Petit type of guy.
Yeah.
Well, but that's, you know, which raises real questions, though. If that's what you're going to,
who's going to be the top defenseman to move at the deadline who has an expiring contract? Who's the Kevin Shattenkirk?
Well, they're not going to move him.
No, they're making a push again. Yeah.
I don't know.
Who's the Kevin Shattenkirk of 3 years ago?
I don't know off the top of my head. I would, let me throw this at you, though. And this is to Gord's point about sort of staying the course. In some ways, doesn't this give you an excuse?
Excuse for what?
An excuse to stay the course? We can't possibly replace Morgan Riley. It can't possibly be done. We are going to see what we can do. We've got a new head coach in. We're going to see what we can do. We're going to keep our powder dry because we got major moves to make next year as well. We're not going to trade any of our young forwards. We're going to try to wing this with what we have. Maybe add, you know, a veteran to help us out, fourth or fifth defenseman. I don't know. I'm just saying, if you're the Leafs, you've got some excuses here. You got some excuses.
But I think they've run out of excuses because of the number of first-round playoff losses they've had. And Kyle Dubas came out, and he made his move. He made his power play move to bring in his buddy, who's the coach, and he said, I stake my reputation on this coach and on this team. I stake my career on it. So what he's basically pushed most of his chips to the middle of the table, Dubas has. And he knows what's coming. He knows what's coming with his salary structure. He knows what's coming with his goaltender salary. And at this point, it doesn't matter how many injuries you have. if this team doesn't get out of the first round of the playoffs this year after all of this, let alone if they don't get in at all,
yeah,
then what?
Yeah. No, I don't. And that's like the
two defenseman injuries aren't going to let you off the hook.
Yeah, I'm not sure those are acceptable outcomes. You know, the fates have conspired against you, I'm not sure. I do not think you can just say we'll take our chances. I'm not sure that's an option here.
Well, the other thing that we haven't discussed yet is the fact that this team hasn't been able to keep the puck out of its own net with Morgan Rielly logging 20-plus minutes, and that there has been an issue on this front year over year over year since they got good 3 years ago. So looking at their roster today, what's to suggest that that issue is going to get better? I mean, they gave up 6 to the Oilers, and Freddie, who I thought offered up his strongest comments after the Philadelphia game when Babcock was still the coach, I thought he was a little more diplomatic, but still quite clear after the Edmonton game. And Mitch Marner's saying after last night's game, like, we're hanging this guy out to dry constantly. We got to wake up.
Yeah, the
question is, at some point, are they just not capable of playing the way that you've got to play?
I would look, if the question was, would you take your chances with a healthy Muzzin? And we haven't, let's assume we have not seen a healthy Morgan Rielly this year. Mm-hmm. But if say, would you take your chances with this team with those two guys going into the playoffs? Yeah, I probably would. And again, I'm not sure what the outcome would be. It would be interesting, and this team is built the way it's built to play the way it plays. There's an active debate about whether that can be successful, but I would take that shot. The tricky part is you may have those two guys healthy by the time you get to the playoffs, 100%, maybe. But the point is you got to get there, right? And that's what you're alluding to. Like, there's a stretch between now and then that is precarious for this team. And I think, I think that's why you have to do it. I think it's about what happens in between. Because, you're not going to get, Shea Weber's not coming, right? The guy, who would maybe change something here. But you have to do something to get yourself through that stretch to be at least competent on the defensive end so that your offensive firepower can win enough games and get you enough points to get you into the playoffs. So then you can see, and again, maybe those two guys are feeling great by the time you get to April.
Boy, and I'll tell you what, if you're Kyle Dubas, other teams are just smelling blood.
There is that too. Yeah.
They really are.
Well,
because they're,
yeah.
Again, now would be a pretty good time for Tyson Barrie to figure it out.
Yep.
Right.
But that may be what he, what we're seeing may be what he is, right? And again, the idea of, using him the sort of the way he was used in Colorado, I think that's what he is. And maybe it was a little bit of a mirage, but again, I'm not sure he's the guy that fixes it for you. I think he can do something offensively, but I'm not sure he fixes what you need fixed.
This is really hugely hypothetical, but one of the things we've heard about Sheldon Keefe since he's taken over is kind of a new age guy, right? I mean, all the nice, comfy, the nice, cozy things he's done, like let guys make their debut in the, in their home arena and all that stuff. And
rock music at practice.
And this, this sense that he is a very, there's, unlike Mike Babcock, this is a guy who kind of understands his players as people. Do we need to see how that translates into a bit of an authoritarian now because of what's going on with this team? Or do you think you just have to find a way to make it work?
No, I think you find a way to make it work. I think what the players embrace is the communication that they know where they stand. They're pro athletes. They're grown men. They know that's what they want to know. They want to know what the deal is and let's move on. I don't think it's necessarily about an iron fist here.
Mm-hmm.
Look, talent trumps all. You can play or you can't. And there might be a mirage, as Steve said, for a little while. You might be able to get away with something for a little while. You're going to bring up a couple of kids who's going to have a little bit of jump and not a lot of film on them and not a lot of a scouting report on them. But at the end, you are what you are. I think the bigger challenge for Sheldon Keefe is going to be, how do we now maybe just change the way we play? Mm-hmm. How can we now, use a basketball term, how do we take the air out of the basketball here?
Yeah, they're not built. They're not built for that.
Exactly. For that. So are you going to win 9-8 hockey games? Yikes. It's not 1984 anymore. I don't know.
Well, we'll see tomorrow night. The New Jersey Devils are in town to take on the Leafs. Again, Rasmus Sandin will be in the lineup. He has been called up by the Maple Leafs to take the place of Morgan Rielly, who is out for 8 weeks. It has been an eventful day in Major League in Major League Baseball, to say the least. Commissioner Rob Manfred has lowered the boom and then some on the Houston Astros, and the Houston Astros owner kind of doubled down on it as well. We'll talk about Major League Baseball's latest scandal. Is this a bigger deal than the steroid scandal? I think it is. We'll talk about it. It's the Monday Roundtable and Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Yo, open up, man.
Yo, what do you want, man?
My girl just caught me.
You made her catch you?
I don't know how I let this happen.
With who?
The girl next door, you know?
So it is Monday. It is the Writer's Block Roundtable. Blair, Brent, Nadani, MacArthur. Now that we put the Maple Leafs to rest for a bit.
Oh, I think we'll talk about them again.
Probably. Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred came down on the Houston Astros today, suspending their general manager, Jeff Luhnow, and their manager, A.J. Hinch, for a year, fining the team $5 million, taking away the first and second round draft pick in 2020 and 2021. And the owner of the Astros, Jim Crane, then fired both Luhnow and A.J. Hinch. We should also mention that Brandon Taubman, the assistant general manager, who was the central focus in that clubhouse incident last postseason involving Roberto Osuna and a couple of female reporters, has been placed on baseball's ineligible list for a year. I mean, his career is effectively over. The penalties given out to the Astros were as a result of their use of technology in sign stealing and direct contravention of rules
in
Major League Baseball, but for cheating, yeah. Electronically cheating as opposed to the more appropriate type of cheating, which just involves human intelligence. This story still has legs. There's very much an indication that Alex Cora, the manager of the Boston Red Sox, is going to face some sort of discipline for this as well. Carlos Beltran, who was just named manager of the New York Mets, is also cited in this report, although, as my friend Mr. MacArthur pointed out, and to your credit, you said it was not an original thought. Rob Manfred may have decided that working for the Wilpons and managing the Mets is effectively a punishment, as it is, and may not bring down any discipline of Carlos Beltran. All this aside, gentlemen, I think this is worse, looks worse on baseball than the steroid scandal, because we effectively have two of the last three World Series teams. They're cheaters. There's no other way to put it, Mr. Medani.
I was...
You were there for...
Yeah. When I saw Hinch and Luhnow get fired, I wondered if they had lied to the owner along the way. I wondered if this was a scenario where the owner felt duped, where the owner... may have asked the guys, because this is, remember, even before The Athletic and Ken Rosenthal came out with the big explosive story, even last year during the ALCS, there was talk of the whistling that was going on, and Hinch almost scoffed at it and said, you know, that's a joke and we don't do this. The year prior, there were the MLB folks in camera wells wondering what was going on. And you have to think at some point along the way, either the owner asked the GM and manager or the commissioner asked the owner to find out what the hell's going on.
And I just want to throw this out there for people who don't know. Jim Crane is not a corporate lawyer. He's a hands-on lawyer. He's at every game. He's in the stands. He's in the box with Luhnow. This is a guy who spends a lot of time around the ballpark. So he's going to do more than simply pick up the phone and go, what's going on here?
And... he was thoroughly embarrassed during the World Series because of the Brandon Taubman incident.
Right. Mm-hmm.
An incident that, you know, was uncalled for, terrible, whatever. And that dominated the World Series up until Game 7. So all of this has just kind of piled up. And then when the mountain of evidence was presented before the owner of the team, that's when he just said, I've had enough of this.
Yep.
I mean, good for baseball. Finally, Rob Manfred does something. You know, he doesn't do anything about the juice balls. He didn't do anything about Brandon Tubman. He hasn't done a lot of things. But he finally comes down with an iron fist here. But I was most fascinated with how quickly Jim Crane fired those two guys.
Yeah. No, that's a great point, Scott.
Is this punishment suitable for the crime? Because the punishment is henceforth. If you want to take a serious stand on this stuff, you need to punish the team that commits the act at the source. Teams cheat to gain an edge in order to win. And this is what's so disappointing about this story. Look at that Astros roster. Look at that Astros lineup in 2017, and they added Verlander at the August 31st trade deadline. That was a team that was good enough to win the World Series on its own merit. And yet, they cheated. Scrub the 2017 World Championship. Oh. There's not a 1994 World Champion because there was a strike.
Yeah, but there was no baseball played then.
Well, yeah, because there was a strike.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Scrub the championship. Eliminate the championship.
Oh, do that with the Red Sox. I'm fine. But leave the Astros alone.
If we're doing that, is there any Super Bowls won in the 2000s?
Yeah. Has anybody won a Super Bowl?
There you go.
Look, there is footage of the Houston Astros celebrating a World Series championship. But if you want to actually get at the source of all of this stuff, you've got to legitimately punish the teams. You've got to wipe them from the record books. Because what they're after is the title. So there's 20 years from now, they're all going to show up at Minute Maid Park or whatever it's called then, and I doubt Mike Fiers will be invited, but they'll have their little reunion and 20th anniversary, 30th anniversary, and we'll all remember how wonderful it was. And somebody will say, little Johnny, little Sally, you're too young to remember this, but there was kind of some cheating going on.
You know,
it's a tricky one, though, right? Like, that is, it's an interesting, like, the World Series is tainted. It's just the degree. Like, you know, how much did it help? How definitive was it? You know, and again, where you choose to draw the line. Like that, there's no, you know, the other greatest scandal in baseball history was about a team intentionally losing a World Series. Mm-hmm. So they didn't have to worry about it then, right?
Right.
They have, you know, in college, their, you know, victories can be voided, right? If you use ineligible players, they vacate.
The championship, there's no banners hanging from buildings.
Have national championships been vacated, though? Arash, I'm trying to think.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Absolutely. Final four banners have been vacated.
Yes. Yeah. So it can be done.
UMass and Minnesota, or a couple,
you know, and the argument for it here would be that, you know, and again, this is where it gets a little different than the whole steroid quagmire, was that they made explicit that you could not do this. They said you cannot use technology to do this. We are warning you: do not try and do that, because if you do, you will be punished. Now, they didn't say, and we will expunge your record from the books, but. You know, like, everybody's forewarned here. This is, you know, it would be, that's why this punishment is fair. Everything about it is fair, right? This is the biggest punishment ever levied by the commissioner of baseball, aside from the Black Sox, or the Black Sox. Yeah,
unlike steroids, nobody that I know of Major League Baseball came out and said, guys, stop doing it. Can't do it.
Well, it's kind of the opposite, I think.
Well,
steroids was also on an individual basis.
Correct.
I mean, teams turned the other way.
You have team employees given a directive to do this by members of the staff.
Yeah, but my point here is, see, I think in an odd sort of way, I think baseball fans and frankly, those of us in the media, we do a good enough job putting asterisks on things. I don't think you need to put an asterisk on the title. Barry Bonds' career has an asterisk beside it. I don't think any team
championship has one. Mm-hmm. You know, so often in a lockout shortened season, people say, well, is there an asterisk with this one because they didn't play 82? Well, do people put an asterisk beside the San Antonio Spurs, or do they just talk about them as one of the best teams of all time?
Yeah, unless you assume Tom Brady was deflating footballs before they caught him, and that somehow was definitive in helping him win one of those Super Bowls. Right. You know, that's the only one I can come up with, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get the difference, though. The thing that makes this to me much more egregious than steroid use is, you know, I'll probably go to hell for thinking this, but I always viewed steroid use as value added. Guys were doing stuff to hit the ball farther, to make the game more entertaining for me. Andy Pettit was taking stuff so he could come back faster from injury and pitch and earn his money. I don't consider those guys cheating. I've never considered anybody who's used steroids to be a cheater. I just viewed them as somebody who wanted to do, took advantage of technology to do stuff that everybody else was doing better. This is different, though.
So this is what I wonder.
It's an institutional thing. You're
this
right.
is what I wonder, because cheating goes on in baseball every day, every game. Everyone's cheating. Pitchers have stuff on their arms. Baseballs are doctored a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Man in white?
The man in white.
Man in white.
Where is the line now?
Well, you know, but if you get caught doing any of those things,
you get thrown out of the game.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're ejected from the game. That is the punishment.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
You're allowed to steal signals while standing on second base, just not with the use of video.
Right.
Right? That's okay. Right?
Yeah.
Well, that's
yeah. absolutely fair.
Yeah, that's human intelligence. Yes. You're allowed to do that. Yeah.
So, you know, where's the line here?
I think the line is the line. I mean, the rules are there. It's pretty clear cut according to the rules that teams were told to operate by.
Yeah, I think that they made it explicit.
They made it explicit.
On the video, no, I understand that. Yeah. What I'm saying is, for instance, doctoring the baseballs or having sunscreen on your arm in an indoor stadium or having additional pine tar, that's also cheating. Now, I get this is a sophisticated system that was used by the organization intentionally, you know, but there's cheating that happens all the time. And I get not everything's equal, but it's still cheating. So is everything now going to be administered by the letter of the law? I don't know.
Well, I think we also got to take it a step further and have the replay discussion again and tie that in even to robot umpires. So is a ball and a strike? That's subjective for the guy behind the plate, but it is objective whether the ball got any part of the white between the letters and the knees or the belt and the knees, whatever you define the strike zone to be. And that is legitimately objective. Safe out is legitimately objective. Mm. Is there a way that those objective calls can be made by technology and then you scrub the replay system entirely and you throw those employees who kick around behind the scenes in the clubhouse area during games up to some suite and there's almost no interaction, or you somehow manage and moderate and watch over that potential interaction over the course of a game.
Yeah. I don't think anybody's going to do it again. This.
No. But they'll find it's, Steven, it's cat and mouse like everything else in sports.
Well,
but
to a point. But what they just did, the whole point of what Manfred just did was that, it's, you know, the punishment is so draconian that, you know, the winning and losing of a few baseball games, if that's what we're talking about, like let's say the difference using this over the course of a season was three games. I'm not sure anybody's going to roll the dice for three games. You know, I think that's probably what we're talking about here. Like again, who knows? How do you quantify it?
I think this video cheating is now over.
Yeah.
Because any manager or GM that gets wind that this is going on, well, we just saw what happened to those guys.
I'll never work again in the league.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. And unlike the other stuff, you know, the bug spray and that may have an impact on a particular play. This impacts the whole game. The video cheating impacts the whole game.
Sure.
It calls into question the legitimacy of what you have just watched compared to the other run-of-the-mill cheating, which makes, I know that sounds horribly kind of trying to split the moral imperative there, but no. I think that's the way you have to look at it.
It's pretty fundamental. Like who was the Blue Jay pitcher that got lit up in Houston? Was it Tapera? Somebody got.
Oh, was it Trent?
Trying to Thornton got lit up.
No, but there was somebody who said.
Oh, you're going back.
Who actually said it was like.
That was Ryan Tapera.
Yeah, they knew.
It was Ryan Tapera.
It was like they knew what I was going to throw before I threw it.
Yeah.
You know, games were decided by this, right? And again, I do think that's why what Manfred did here. Like, A.J. Hinch may work in baseball again at some point in his life, but it just, you know, this cost him a year's salary and a God knows how long in purgatory.
Yes.
Jeff Luhnow, one of the most successful executives in professional sport, will never work as an executive professional sport again, I don't think.
Well, also because everybody else hates him.
Well, there's that, too.
Hated him before this.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So that's, you know, this big time. And, you know, Alex Carr is going to,
You know, he's not going to manage the Boston Red Sox this year, and he might not manage them this season, and he might get fired.
Let me use this as an exit question. The Astros, particularly the Astros, have some players who have put together in the past 3 years numbers that suggest they're going to the Hall of Fame. Looking way ahead.
Don't give me a Hall of Fame.
Way ahead, though. Alec Bregman, the second baseman who just said Altuve. Are their careers now tainted by this? Because the commissioner says he doesn't absolve players of blame here, but he essentially what he said, look, if I was to do that, I'd have to deal with the Players Association. I don't want any part of
that.
Well,
not just that. If you want the players to be honest with you, you have to tell them, hey,
The players are going to give you the documentary evidence that you
absolutely
need. The players, so,
and the anecdotal evidence.
And the anecdotal evidence. All that aside, does this impact how we view guys like Bregman?
Not me.
Gerrit Cole made a ton of money out of his time with the Astros. Does it have any impact on how we view the players?
I don't think there's enough for an individual player in an individual player's career.
That's fair.
I don't think so. And, of course, the Hall of Fame is, you know, the arbitrary decision of a bunch of sports writers, right? So
we'll leave that aside.
And I don't want to predict what a bunch of sports writers would do with it, you know, 15 years from now. But, because it was an organizational sin, you know, I think the sin falls on the organization. I think it falls on the team result. I really do. I think it's a legitimate question that you ask, Scott.
I think it's a legitimate question. I'd rather leave it up to people to put asterisks on things as opposed to taking.
But just on the players, on your question about the players, I mean, is Alex Bregman in the Arenado, Chris Bryant, Matt Chapman, third base conversation? For me, he is a guy who can slide over and play shortstop when Correa is hurt. Altuve was very good on some very bad Astros team
before they figured out the cheating
stuff. Before they figured out how to cheat.
He's the one who actually lived through the 100-plus loss seasons. The others were drafted as a result of it. So I just think there's a large enough body of work with most of those guys that they pass the litmus test, the smell test.
What an organization.
What a great organization.
Always that arrogance.
Oh, yeah.
Jeff Passan's quite.
But if you win, you get to be arrogant, right? Like,
There is something to be said for not giving a crap.
Yeah.
Necessary.
Tell you, even after when that Brandon Tubman bleep was hitting the fan, I got to cover the World Series this year, and Hazel and I would be sitting there. And just how smug Jeff Luhnow would be, and how, you know, he gets up on the podium after baseball forced him to fire Brandon Tubman, and he spoke about how difficult it was to fire Brandon Tubman and what a good dude Brandon Tubman is. And then he says, somebody asked him, have you spoke with the Sports Illustrated writer in question? And he said, no, I haven't. And she was sitting right there in the room.
Yep. Karma's a bitch.
Whew. There's so many places I could go for the segue, the NFL, but I won't. We'll talk a little NFL.
Heck of a day in Houston, you'd blow a 24-0.
Great day to be in Houston.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, if you're the Houston Rockets right now, you're all staying under your bed. Anything tonight. We'll talk a little NFL playoffs. It's the Monday Roundtable. It's Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590, the Fan, Sportsnet 360.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590, the Fan.
Welcome back to Writer's Block. It is the Monday Roundtable. Jeff Blair, Stephen Brunt, Scott MacArthur, Arash Madani, Tim and Sid are just around the corner. It's not like the boys don't have anything to talk about.
No, Sid back from his life-threatening illness?
Did he
recover? You did a great job filling in.
Thank you.
Very noble of you, you know, given the terrible circumstances.
Yes. Yeah. I believe he is going to fight to live another day.
He's such he's a brave little soldier, Sid.
Well, you know. He hangs in there. So you guys survived watching the 49ers-Vikings game. We've already talked about this. Here's something I want to throw out. I really wanted to see Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
I wanted to see them head-to-head. Do we know yet who the next Brady Manning.
It's happening Perry right.
It's going to be. Yeah. Who is it?
Well, Mahomes is half of it right
Mahomes
now.
Mahomes is half of it. Who's the other guy? Do we need to?
He's got
to
be in the AFC if Mahomes' foil, right? Because they've got to be able to play.
Yeah.
Almost every year.
Well, Deshaun's right there.
Yeah, you know,
Lamar's
and,
right there.
Yeah, no, look, this is the golden age. You know, Arash, I flipped your note about that. We are living through the golden age of quarterbacking. You know, like, I think 10 of the greatest quarterbacks we've ever played the game, period, probably played in the last decade. Yeah. You know, like, think about it, right?
And
like,
we talked about guys in college coming up.
Well, there's an unbelievable, the two guys playing tonight are pretty good. But, you know, think about it. Obviously, we're going to talk about Brady and Manning to start with, but, you know, think of the other guys within, you know, a very short span, and then look at this. It's Kirk Cousins,
and then put Kirk Cousins. Compare Kirk Cousins
and Ryan Tannehill is going to, you know, may play in the Super Bowl still, but like there's an extraordinary group of quarterbacks right now. Like that position has evolved. Number one, but we're seeing guys doing things that, you know, it's funny. Like when Tannehill, it reminded you they looked at those Tannehill's very unimpressive stats from the Tennessee win. Right, he only threw 10 passes.
Sure, mm-hmm.
That's what Bob Greasy used to do.
Yeah,
you know, Bob Greasy, who's remembered as a great, great quarterback,
Larry
but he threw 12. Yeah, he threw 12 passes.
Wasn't he the quarterback of the undefeated 72 Dolphins?
He was indeed.
Right.
But that's what he handed the ball to Larry Zonka, and you know, he had Paul Warfield out there, but I'm not sure how often he threw to him. You know, so that's what quarterbacks did back in the day. He threw 15 times a game. Yeah. Like we're looking at guys now who, if necessary, can throw the ball 40 times a game and can run. Like this is a crazy time we're watching, and that's. That's why the game's, you know, that's why, like that, Deshaun Watson's a great quarterback. You know, he's right there. You know, his team's not as good as that Kansas City team, but he's right there.
I think it's really important to remember this, though. Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, Lamar Jackson are all on rookie contracts right now.
Yep.
Yeah. They are surrounded by a lot. Now, they're exceptional quarterbacks, but they're surrounded by a lot of talent in Kansas City. That defense is ridiculous. And you have weapons around you. Once you start paying a guy $30 million, things change.
Mm-hmm.
So this is their window for sure right now. And I don't think it's an accident that those three teams not only have great quarterbacks, but that they're not paying their quarterbacks top dollar.
Although, no, it's a good point.
Yeah. The 49ers are an exception. But then again, they had $120 million in cap space because they stunk. And they gave a chunk of that to Garoppolo, revamped the defensive line. But I also think we're living in a golden age of coaching. You and I, Rash and I watched the game together at my place on Saturday, and one of the things we talked about was all the trickery.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it is absolutely, with all the motion, precise when you've got to snap that football.
Oh, yes.
You snap it a millisecond too late, and it's going to hit that slot receiver
it's
who's Armageddon. In motion.
It's,
like, it would
chaos.
Be
yeah.
chaotic. So it is so drilled down and specific, the zone run game that Kyle Shanahan's running. And I just think I agree on the quarterbacks. I also think we're at a level of coaching here.
So naturally, Dallas went out and hired Mike McCarthy, right? Hired a guy who's the world has passed by.
Superimposed Mike McCarthy's head on John Tavares's and the Toronto Maple Leafs blanket for the Dallas Cowboys blanket, like he slept over at Jerry's place.
You know, but I wonder how much of this, I think, Scotty, I think you're right. We're in a golden age of coaching, and I also think we're in a golden age of guys who come out of college, and they've been really well specifically coached as quarterbacks
Jeff,
in college.
They're running pro offenses in high school right now.
Yeah. But that's what I mean. This is kind of that we're going to see this more and more because we're seeing more and more of these guys come up.
Yeah, no question. No question. I mean, I look at a Canadian kid, Michael O'Connor, who's from Ottawa, and he went and did the last couple of years of his high school at the IMG Academy in Bradenton, Florida, and he got recruited by a bunch of schools, ends up committing to Penn State, where Bill O'Brien was the head coach.
Right.
O'Brien then left for Houston, and O'Connor transferred out, and now O'Connor is with the Argos. He's on their depth chart, but from a...
Poor guy.
Yeah. From the time he was a... teenager, mid-teens, he was running a pro-style offense. Tell Bob Greasy that.
Yes. Well, back in the day, yes.
Yeah.
Well, but you don't have guys coming out of, you know, old-fashioned option offense, not the RPOs, but the cloud of dust anymore. You know, and that's what, you know, but there used to be that thing where, you would run that kind of an offense. You might be running the wishbone in college.
Yeah.
And then suddenly had to go into a pro offense, and pro offenses then were not what they are now. So you're right. These guys are coming out, you know, again, watch Joe Burrow's tonight. Playing for LSU. You You know, like he can play in the NFL. He could have played in the NFL to start this year, I think.
Started for the
Vikings. Who knew when he was kind of, you know, in the, down the depth chart in Ohio State. But
who goes to the Super Bowl?
The easy answer right now would be San Francisco and KC. But, you know.
Andy Reid. I've been wrong about Andy Reid's not going to screw it up until
as
the Super Bowl.
As long as it's San Francisco. As long as it's not Green Bay.
No.
As long as it's not Green Bay. As long as it's not that smug... Go ahead, sorry.
Well, you know, it's like anybody but the Yankees.
Aside from the fact that Arash and I generally see the world the same way, it was helpful to both of us on Saturday afternoon to know that the other was cheering for the winner's team this coming week because the options were Seattle and Green Bay.
Yeah.
Like, it does not get much worse from my perspective than that game last night in terms of options.
Scotty said that pregame. He said, we're on the same page, right? I said, yeah. I said, I'm rooting for the Niners next week.
All right.
That's good.
But I think there's going to be a lot of red in the uniforms in the Super Bowl. Niners and Chiefs.
I think it'd be a lot of fun. I think it'd be a lot of fun seeing those two teams. Tennessee, they just don't. I mean, I think Brunt's point is if Tennessee gets a lead early and just turns around and keeps handing the ball off.
They went into Foxborough, went into Baltimore and won. So
we may have said the same thing.
Yeah. And I didn't see that. And again, the difference, Kansas City didn't panic, weirdly enough, down 24-0. Now, so a couple of things broke their way almost immediately to get them back in.
Bill O'Brien started to coach.
But you saw, I don't blame him for the fourth down gamble, and I don't blame him for the fake punt. The fake punt's something you call on the line. You saw it there. The guy made a crazy play. It was a great play. Stop it. You know, I told you
guys to be aggressive.
I'm not going
to
kill him for those two, but watching Baltimore fall apart internally, that's the one, you know, and that is a bit coaching, right? Because they imploded. And they did the opposite of what Kansas City did, which was they got down and they just started turning on each other and say, what are you doing?
What happened to Lamar Jackson in that game?
Well, he was just under siege the whole game. That offensive line did nothing for him. And I tell you, that Mike Vrabel, he's Bill Belichick light. I mean, he learned from Belichick. Yeah. That's a lot of watching what Tennessee's doing reminds me of what the Patriots did against the greatest show on turf in St. Louis. They find the player to shut down, and they say, let everybody else beat you.
If they beat in consecutive weeks in the playoffs, New England, Baltimore, and Kansas City.
That's one of the...
With Ryan Tannehill as quarterback, that is one of the greatest coaching performances in history.
As the sixth seed. And I was just thinking of Bill Cowher because of the halftime thing on Saturday, which was really cool when he got announced into the Hall of Fame. The year he won the Super Bowl,
Jimmy John.
The Steelers were a sixth seed. And they went on the road three times, and then they beat Arizona to win the Super Bowl. It's been done.
It's been done.
I'm sure all those Dolphins fans are out there saying, we told you so, but maybe not. Guys, thanks for doing this. I appreciate it.
Yeah, good to see you guys, man.
Good to see you. Arash Badani, Scott MacArthur, thank you very much for joining us. Mr. Brunt, you'll be back tomorrow.
I will be back all week long.
Tim and Sid are next. Lots to talk about today. Thanks for spending some time with us. We'll see you tomorrow.